All right, good evening, everyone. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, November 1st, 2021. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on a weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. Or if anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on the donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. All right, we're going to pick up where we left off last week in our Bible reading. We're in the Gospel of Luke, and we're picking up on Luke chapter 8, read by Alexander Scorby. So,
chapter 8. And it came to pass afterward that he went throughout every city and village, preaching and showing the glad tidings of the kingdom of God. And the 12 were with him, and certain women which had been healed of evil spirits and infirmities, Mary called Magdalene, out of whom went seven devils, and Joanna the wife of Cusa, Herod's steward, and Susanna, and many others, which ministered unto him of their substance. And when much people were gathered together, and were come to him out of every city, he spake by a parable. A sower went out to sow his seed, and as he sowed, some fell by the wayside, and it was trodden down, and the fowls of the air devoured it. And some fell upon a rock, and as soon as it was sprung up, it withered away, because it lacked moisture. And some fell among thorns, and the thorns sprang up with it and choked it. And other fell on good ground, and sprang up, and bare fruit an hundredfold. And when he had said these things, he cried, He that hath ears to hear, let him hear. And his disciples asked him, saying, What might this parable be? And he said, Unto you it is given to know the mysteries of the kingdom of God, but to others in parables, that seeing they might not see, and hearing they might not understand. Now the parable is this. The seed is the word of God. Those by the wayside are they that hear. Then cometh the devil, and taketh away the word out of their hearts, lest they should believe and be saved. They on the rock are they which, when they hear, receive the word with joy. And these have no root, which for a while believe, and in time of temptation fall away. And that which fell among thorns are they which, when they have heard, go forth, and are choked with cares and riches and pleasures of this life, and bring no fruit to perfection. But that on the good ground are they which, in an honest and good heart, having heard the word, keep it, and bring forth fruit with patience. No man, when he hath lighted a candle, covereth it with a vessel, or putteth it under a bed, but setteth it on a candlestick, that they which enter in may see the light. For nothing is secret that shall not be made manifest, neither anything hid that shall not be known and come abroad. Take heed, therefore, how ye hear. For whosoever hath, to him shall be given, and whosoever hath not, from him shall be taken even that which he seemeth to have. Then came to him his mother and his brethren, and could not come at him for the press. And it was told him by certain, which said, Thy mother and thy brethren stand without, desiring to see thee. And he answered and said unto them, My mother and my brethren are these which hear the word of God, and do it. Now it came to pass on a certain day that he went into a ship with his disciples, and he said unto them, Let us go over unto the other side of the lake. And they launched forth. But as they sailed, he fell asleep. And there came down a storm of wind on the lake, and they were filled with water, and were in jeopardy. And they came to him and awoke him, saying, Master, Master, we perish. Then he arose and rebuked the wind and the raging of the water, and they ceased, and there was a calm. And he said unto them, Where is your faith? And they, being afraid, wondered, saying one to another, What manner of man is this? For he commandeth even the winds and water, and they obey him. And they arrived at the country of the Gadarenes, which is over against Galilee. And when he went forth to land, there met him out of the city a certain man, which had devils long time, and wear no clothes, neither abode he in any house, but in the tombs. When he saw Jesus, he cried out and fell down before him, and with a loud voice said, What have I to do with thee, Jesus, thou Son of God Most High? I beseech thee, torment me not. For he had commanded the unclean spirit to come out of the man, for oftentimes it had caught him, and he was kept bound with chains and in fetters, and he brake the bands, and was driven of the devil into the wilderness. And Jesus asked him, saying, What is thy name? And he said, Legion, because many devils were entered into him. And they besought him that he would not command them to go out into the deep. And there was there an herd of many swine feeding on the mountain, and they besought him that he would suffer them to enter into them. And he suffered them. Then went the devils out of the man, and entered into the swine, and the herd ran violently down a steep place into the lake, and were choked. When they that fed them saw what was done, they fled, and went and told it in the city and in the country. Then they went out to see what was done, and came to Jesus, and found the man out of whom the devils were departed, sitting at the feet of Jesus, clothed and in his right mind. And they were afraid. They also which saw it told them by what means he that was possessed of the devils was healed. Then the whole multitude of the country of the Gadarenes round about besought him to depart from them, for they were taken with great fear. And he went up into the ship and returned back again. Now the man out of whom the devils were departed besought him that he might be with him. But Jesus sent him away, saying, Return to thine own house, and show how great things God hath done unto thee. And he went his way, and published throughout the whole city how great things Jesus had done unto him. And it came to pass that when Jesus was returned, the people gladly received him, for they were all waiting for him. And behold, there came a man named Jairus, and he was a ruler of the synagogue, and he fell down at Jesus' feet and besought him that he would come into his house. For he had one only daughter, about 12 years of age, and she lay a-dying. But as he went, the people thronged him. And a woman, having an issue of blood 12 years, which had spent all her living upon physicians, neither could be healed of any, came behind him and touched the border of his garment. And immediately her issue of blood stanched. And Jesus said, Who touched me? When all denied, Peter and they that were with him said, Master, the multitude throng thee and press thee, and sayest thou, Who touched me? And Jesus said, Somebody hath touched me. For I perceive that virtue is gone out of me. And when the woman saw that she was not hid, she came trembling, and falling down before him, she declared unto him before all the people for what cause she had touched him, and how she was healed immediately. And he said unto her, Daughter, be of good comfort. Thy faith hath made thee whole. Go in peace. While he yet spake, there cometh one from the ruler of the synagogue's house, saying to him, Thy daughter is dead, trouble not the master. But when Jesus heard it, he answered him, saying, Fear not, believe only, and she shall be made whole. And when he came into the house, he suffered no man to go in, save Peter and James and John, and the father and the mother of the maiden. And all wept and bewailed her, but he said, Weep not, she is not dead, but sleepeth. And they laughed him to scorn, knowing that she was dead. And he put them all out, and took her by the hand, and called, saying, Maid, arise. And her spirit came again, and she arose straightway, and he commanded to give her meat. And her parents were astonished, but he charged them that they should tell no man what was done.
Okay. By the way, Terry, did that play through, or was there any breaks in that?
Sounded very good. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Let me just clear my screen here. Okay. Before we go into tonight's subject, I guess we'll do any kind of announcements or any questions. Jan, do we have anything?
We are totally free and clear, John. I have received no questions, and I really don't have any comments.
Okay, great. All right, just a quick note. I mentioned it last week. I'm looking for a place to do a seminar on the committees of safety. And we're going to be inviting people from the surrounding counties and even the surrounding states if they want to come. You know, we've had events in the past where people from Connecticut came in New Jersey, and sometimes even up in the New England states, sometimes people would come down, and a few times a few people out in Pennsylvania. So, but the focus is going to be on starting the Committee of Safety and introduction to the Committee of Safety, but with a strong encouragement to the individuals who show up to get this started in their counties. And I'd like to impress this point onto everyone. America will not be saved unless the people step up and take hold of their government so that they would have government by consent. If the people don't step up to take hold to have government by consent, then the political process that's in place right now is just going to continue in the way they are. You're going to have the party bosses and all of the individuals that are controlled by them, and the court systems will not become courts of record. It's pretty apparent. I've been listening to a lot of people that are on our side and that are in office. And they really don't understand the common law. They don't understand how severe and serious our court system is and how destructive the Bar Association is. They have a lot of faith in the Bar Association. And the Bar Association is the minions of the New World Order. They're the devil's advocate. Everything is controlled by the Bar. Everything. Major corporations, all the money flow, pharmaceuticals, medical systems. It doesn't matter. Well, business or... Google and Facebook and all the others. Everything is controlled by lawyers. Everything. Big corporations, and the powers that be. You know, the 100 or 200 families. Generally, I think it's pretty much 100 families that really control this entire world. They own all this. They're heavy stockholders in all these things, and. Trump can do what he has to do, and the military can do what they have to do, and they can hand us back the nation. And if we don't know what to do with it and how to do it, then it's just going to fall apart. So committees of safety is the only way. Committees of safety is what our founding fathers used to create this nation of ours. The committees of safety did, turn into the committee man, which they shouldn't have. That really was the codification of the committees of safety. That's exactly what it was. Brought them under the control, and right under the control of the party bosses, who are controlled by the powers that be, which is all put together and all the laws back to the minions of the New World Order, who write all the necessary statutory processes that we are, jailed into. You know, we're incarcerated into it, and the people don't even see it. The people don't even realize it. Very few of us realize it. But to understand the common law and what liberty really is, and that we are to be held to no man-made law at all, that no judges are to sit in a court of law, none, zero. The people are to control those courts, 100%. There's a magistrate in there, and the magistrate is to perform the will of the jury, and not to interfere with the will of the jury, not to try to interpret the law or make any suggestions to the jury itself. Of course, that individual should answer any questions that are asked, but again, it is the people that need to decide. It's the people that decide whether there's going to be a case against an individual on a criminal matter, for instance, through a grand jury. The people will decide. Today, the county attorneys, the prosecutors, they get their ham sandwich every single time because they have total control, stacked juries. Total control, just leading them around by their nose. And the people don't even realize it. Same thing in the courts. Stacked juries. People don't even realize it. We need to get these committees of safeties going. I am desperately looking for a place local in my general area to get something going. And those who come, we're going to, like I said, encourage and them to get committees of safety started within their counties. And starting in New York, I will travel anywhere in New York. And, so if someone wants to get a committee of safety going in a particular county, And they asked me, I'll come up there, and we'll try to get the county surrounding also, try to get as many people as we can so we can spark off as many committees of safety as possible. I'll travel throughout New York within reason. I'm not going to travel to every single county, but we do two or three or four counties here, two or three or four counties there. They set the place up. I'll come up and bring the introduction of the committees of safety. And anyone, of course, all the material we're going to be using at these seminar will be available for anyone to run their own seminar. They can, just follow my lead. Of course, we're encouraging people in other states to do the same thing and get their states going. My intention is to really spark up committees of safety in all 62 New York counties. And whatever that's going to take, it'll take. And if I get other people, I know I have an individual, a friend of mine, and he's in the process to some degree and follows along with what we're doing and understands a lot of the problems and has already introduced to a lot of people the committee man process, which we're moving away from. We're taking a different direction. The Committee of Safety should take that over 100%, and we'll talk about how that can happen. And it is pretty simple, and it's a lot simpler. Why do we need to get elected in order to, and then be controlled by the party bosses and statutes? We need to be free from those things. You know, we have government not by the majority, but by the majority that participate. And if 200 people in a county get together to work, to participate, to take control of their local governments and their county governments and their state governments and their federal governments from the grassroots level, that's what we need to do. 200 people in a county, that's great. If we get 500 people in the county, that's even better. Many hands make less work. So the more people, the less work we have to do. Because there is work involved in getting people elected. We have to walk petitions to put people onto a ballot. So there's a lot of things we need to do. And we need to come together on a monthly basis and in our counties to talk about the problems, to assist individuals that are having problems with bureaucrats, to make sure that the common law is being enforced in our courts, to make sure that the party bosses have been removed from power and authority. There's a lot we need to talk about those things, and over time we'll address a lot of these issues, party issues, and committee man issues, and many, many other things. Of course, the administration for the juries, the grand and petit juries within the courts, and to take control of those courts. But again, people need to be getting together on a monthly basis in their own counties, need to be discussing the necessary things in order to grow and to understand how to have government by consent, and get people involved continually, constantly growing and growing, educating the communities that you live in, getting people to re-educate themselves, those people who are out of school already, of course, many people, but those people who are in school, our children. We need to visit the schools within our counties, within our local areas, spreading out throughout all our counties to make sure our schools are teaching a good common law civics course and a constitutional course to make sure that our children grow up as patriots, that they understand the process, because they have stolen that from us. They have destroyed our republic, and it is far worse than most people realize. Far, far worse. We don't really have liberty. Just get yourself into some kind of trouble, which may not even be trouble at all, but they'll call it trouble. Get caught up in the court systems, and you will find out how far our liberties have been destroyed. They're not there no more. And only the people can take it back. But if they refuse to step up, stand up, and do what has to be done, then they can't have it. We need to teach our children to do the same thing. We're born into a nation that is blessed by God, blessed with these unalienable rights, the ability to control our government, and to have righteous courts and a strong economy. But we have to maintain it. We have to maintenance it. We have to teach our children that they too must get involved. They don't need to put a lot of time into it, but they have to put a little bit of time into it. What is 2 or 3 hours a month? What is that? It's nothing. If that's the cost of freedom, then that's nothing. And it is the cost of freedom, by the way. That's all it takes, 2 or 3 hours a month for every individual. Get involved in your county, and you will have liberty. And we will bring this nation back to where it should be. and bring our court systems back to courts of justice under the common law. Okay, all right, tonight we're going to look, let's see what we'll be looking at tonight. The topic is democracy versus the republic. So that's what we're going to be looking at tonight. It's about, I think it's about 26, 27 minutes long. We're going to go through a PowerPoint, and then we'll open up for questions, comments, thoughts, corrections, whatever. So anybody wants to get into the queue, it's a star 6 and a 1 to get into the queue for questions concerning this subject matter only. And once we go through the questions on this subject matter, then we'll move to the next process of our programming and eventually back to a regular open forum where any subject is open for discussion or any questions or corrections on any subject matter. Okay, so tonight we're going to be looking at democracy versus republic. Democracy versus republic. Tyranny naturally rises out of democracy, Plato. Benjamin Franklin said, "A democracy is two wolves and a lamb voting on what to have for lunch." Thomas Jefferson said, "A democracy is nothing more than mob rule, where 51% of the people may take away the rights of the other 49. Wake up, America. Article 4, Section 4. The United States shall guarantee to every state of this Union a republican form of government and shall protect each of them from invasion." Stop calling us a democracy. There are five basic forms of government. They are monarchy, ruled by one person, oligarchy, ruled by a small handful of people, democracy, ruled by majority of the citizens, republic, ruled by law, and anarchy, no government, mob rule. Presently, there are 159 republics in the world. Among them are China, Russia, Korea, Iran, Iraq, and Cuba. What they all have in common, along with all monarchies, democracies, and oligarchies, and anarchy, is rule by man. Democracies always lead to mob rule and eventually transforms to an oligarchy, often hidden behind the facade, democratic republic, people's republic, socialism, Marxism, communism, or democracy, to name a few. Thomas Jefferson rediscovered a unique type of republic, one ruled by nature's God and not man, mirrored under Israel, that was established by God through Moses in 1400 BC. This was demonstrated by Jefferson and Franklin's proposed seals that expressed Israel's exodus out of Egypt. Jefferson added the backside of the seal, representing Israel's common law, brought to Britain in the 5th century by two Anglo-Saxons named Hengist and Horsa from the Germanic tribes from the north. Unfortunately, the two-sided seal of the United States were represented by Rome, by an eagle, and Egypt, by a pyramid, whose law traces back to Babylon, the exact opposite of Israel. Jefferson immediately recognized that the law they brought to Britain was in harmony with the Bible. History revealed that the people of Britain, having the Bible, developed a strong bond with the Anglo-Saxons because they were living the principles of the Bible. Jefferson strongly surmised that these people might be the remnants of the lost tribes of Israel. Jefferson also found a connection with the European intellectual movement of the late 17th and 18th centuries, emphasizing reason and individualism rather than tradition. Said movement was driven by philosophers such as Descartes, Locke, and Newton, and its prominent exponents including Kant, Goethe, Voltaire, Rousseau, and Adam Smith. It is under these influences that Jefferson discovered America's freedom formula, writing America's foundation of law, the Declaration of Independence, which placed the fate of Americans into the hands of the King of Kings, to live under his law and receiving the blessings of his liberty. Our founding fathers were all well read and believed that they were acting and building a new nation under the providence of God. Our founders believed that the United States was the new Israel of the Bible, as clearly represented by Jefferson and Franklin's proposed seals, and as long as we live under his law, we are. It was through collaboration of Thomas Jefferson and James Madison who fathered the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. Thomas Jefferson and James Madison had a rich and long friendship. They collaborated on numerous political ideas and decisions that had shaped our country. Madison first met Jefferson during the Virginia Constitutional Convention in 1776, but it wasn't until 3 years later that the two cemented their friendship, working together daily, while Jefferson served as governor of Virginia and Madison was on the Council of State. Although Jefferson certainly acted as a mentor to Madison, the two men had relatively equal relationship, and they collaborated well. Jefferson and Madison were both deep philosophical thinkers. It is important to realize that the United States is the only republic that is a republic under the authority of God, therefore the only lawful republic in the world. Authority from God, empowering his people. God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him. Male and female created he them. And God blessed them. And God said unto them, be fruitful and multiply, and replenish the earth and subdue it. This is the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel. After those days, saith the Lord, I will put my laws into their mind and write them into their hearts, and I will be to them a God, and they shall be to me a people. A covenant with God, America's foundation, Declaration of Independence, where we read, when in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another, and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal stations to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them. A decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the cause which impel them to the separation. We, therefore, the representatives of the United States of America, in General Congress, assembled, appealing to the Supreme Judge of the world for the rectitude of our intentions, do in the name and by the authority of the good people of these colonies, solemnly publish and declare that these United Colonies are, and of a right ought to be, free and independent states, that they are absolved from all allegiance to British Crown, and that all political connections between them and the state of Great Britain is and ought to be totally dissolved, and that as free and independent states, they have full power to levy war, conclude peace, contract alliances, establish commerce, and do all other acts and things which independent states may have a right to do, and for the support of this declaration, with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. Authority from we the people to government. Preamble to the Constitution. We the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. Bill of Rights. The conventions of a number of the states, having at the time of their adoption the Constitution, expressed the desire in order to prevent misconstruction or abuse of its powers, that further declaratory and restrictive clauses should be added, and is extending the ground of public confidence in the government will best ensure the beneficent ends of its institution. Declaration of Independence. Whenever any form of government becomes destructive to our rights, it is the right of the people to alter government and institute new servants. Article 6, Subsection 2. This Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuant thereof, and all treaties made or which shall be made under the authority of the United States, shall be the supreme law of the land, and the judges in every state shall be bound thereby. Anything in the Constitution or the laws of any state to the contrary, notwithstanding. James Madison. The people have an indubitable, unalienable, and indefeasible right to reform or change their government whenever it be found adverse or inadequate to the purpose of its institution. Samuel Adams. The natural liberty of man is to be free from any superior power on earth, and not to be under the will or legislative authority of man, but only to have the laws of nature for his rule. Thomas Jefferson. When injustice becomes law, resistance becomes duty. If a government, either by malfeasance or neglect, fails to protect those rights, or even worse, if the government itself begins to violate those rights, then it is the right and duty of the people to regain control of their affairs and set up a form of government which will serve the people better. These rights, which have been bestowed by the Creator, they cannot be altered or eliminated at any time. That is, they cannot be taken away or violated without the offender coming under the judgment and the wrath of the Creator. The Supreme Court of the United States. Under our system of government, upon the individuality and intelligence of the citizens, the state does not claim to control them except as his or her conduct to others, leaving him or her the sole judge as to all that affects them. The very meaning of sovereignty is that the decree of the sovereignty makes the law. A consequence of this prerogative is the legal ubiquity of the King of Kings, his majesty, God, in the eye of the law is always present in all his courts. Though he cannot personally distribute justice, his judges, which are the jurists, are the mirror by which the king's image, it's God's will, written in their hearts is reflected. For laws are made for us. We are not made for the laws. Every man is independent of all legislative laws except those prescribed by nature. He is not bound by any institution formed by his fellow men without his consent. We, the people, have been providentially entrusted via natural law to dispense justice, and were provided legal recourse to address the criminal conduct of the judiciary and our representatives. The people have the unbridled right, by law and in law, to impanel their own grand juries and present true bills of information, indictments, and presentments to a court of justice, which is then required to commence a criminal proceeding under natural law. Democracy is just the first step to an oligarchy. Article 4, Section 4. The United States shall guarantee to every state in this union a republican form of government, and shall protect each of them against invasion. In 1993, Speaker Representative James Traficant Jr. of Ohio, addressing the House, revealing the bankruptcy of the United States into the congressional record. All United States offices, officials, and departments are now operating with a de facto status in name only under the emergency war's powers. With the constitutional republican form of government now dissolved, the receivers of the bankruptcy have adopted a new form of government for the United States. This new form of government is known as a democracy, being an established socialist communist order under a new governor for America. The word republic comes from the Latin res publica, which means simply the public thing, or more simply, the law. Democracy, on the other hand, is derived from the Greek words demos and kratein, which translates to the people to rule. Democracy, therefore, has always been synonymous with majority rule. Therefore, we are a republic which is ruled by law, or a democracy ruled by the Marxist mob. Our founding fathers reviled democracy and gave their posterity a republic. As Thomas Jefferson said, the republican is the only form of government which is not eternally at open or secret war with the rights of mankind. Knowledge will forever govern ignorance, and a people who mean to be their own governors must arm themselves with the power which knowledge gives. James Madison. It's time that we, the people, change the narrative. The inauguration of Thomas Jefferson as president was a monumental moment in American, even world history. Every detail of the day was analyzed, from Jefferson's decision to walk to the event instead of riding in a carriage, to his plain dress instead of a fancy suit and a sword. However, the most important part of the whole affair was the one line uttered in the middle of his first inaugural address. He said, "We are all Republicans. We are all Federalists." This was Thomas Jefferson's way of shouting from the rooftops that this was a nation of law and not of men. Federalist Papers, number 1, Hamilton. The necessity of a government at least equally energetic with the one proposed to the attainment of this object, the conformity of the proposed Constitution to the true principles of a republican government, in its equivalence to our state constitutions. Federalist Paper number 10, Madison. Democracies have ever been spectacles of turbulence and contention, have ever been found incompatible with personal security or the rights of property, and have in general been as short in their lives as they have been violent in their deaths. Federalist Paper number 48. In a democracy where a multitude of people exercise in person the legislative functions and are continually exposed by their incapacity for regular deliberation and concerted measures to the ambitious intrigues of their executive magistrates, tyranny may well be apprehended when some favorable emergency to start up in the same quarter. Anti-Federalist, number 74. There is not a tincture of democracy in the proposed Constitution, except the nominal elections. Every free man of America ought to hold up this idea to himself, and he has no superior but God and the laws, as indication that something has been present. Anti-Federalist, number 10. True Democrats are in general fanatics and enthusiasts, and some few sensible, charming madmen. Anti-Federalist, number 18 and 20. A confederacy of republics must be the establishment in America, or we must cease together to retain the republican form of government. From the moment we became one great republic, either in form or substance, the period is very shortly removed when we shall sink first into a monarchy and then into despotism. Before we established a government whose acts will be the supreme law of the land and whose power will extend to almost every case without exception, we ought to carefully guard ourselves by a Bill of Rights against the evasion of these liberties, which it is essential for us to retain, which it is of no real use for government to deprive us of, but which in the course of human events have been too often insulted with the wantonness of an idled barricadry. Auburn Herbert, a 19th century British politician and writer, described democracy like this. Five men are in a room. Because three men take one view and two another, have the three men any moral right to enforce their view on the other two men? What magical power comes over the three men that because they are one more in number than the two men, therefore they suddenly become possessors of the minds and the bodies of these others? As long as they were two or to two, so long we supposed each man remained master of his own mind and body. But from the moment that another man, acting heaven only knows from what motives, has joined himself to one party or the other, that party has become straightway possessed of the souls and the bodies of the other party. Was there ever such a degrading and indefensible superstition? It is not the true lineal descendants of the old superstitions about emperors and high priests and their authority over the souls and bodies of men. We constantly hear congressmen, senators, presidents, and even the United States Supreme Court justices refer to America as a democracy. Are our elected servants that ignorant of our Constitution, our history, and our heritage? Or is there a methodical covert conspiracy hell-bent on destroying our republic? Just how close are we? Or should I say, how close were we? I think the following says it all. When President Barack Obama, during the 2016 White House Correspondents' Dinner, where he predicted Hillary Clinton presidency in 2017, said, "The end of the republic has never looked better." And then the unexpected happened. By God's mercy and divine providence, the coup failed, and President Trump was elected in her stead and declared, in contrast, "In America, the people govern, the people rule, and the people are sovereign. I was elected not to take power, but to give power to the American people where it belongs." The word democracy appears nowhere in the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, or its capstone Bill of Rights. Article 4, Section 4, the Constitution guarantees to every state of the Union a republican form of government. James Madison, known as the father of the Constitution, states, "We ought to exist under republican constitutions," referencing both the federal constitution and the state constitutions, not constitutions under a democracy. Government by the multitude is a form of government wherein the populace has the whole power and administration of its own hands. The abuse of democracy is mob rule. With the introduction of representative democracy, which is a form of government where the powers of sovereignty are delegated to a body of men elected from time to time who exercise them for the benefit of the whole nation, which such a democracy unshackled by law and constitution, the results would be absolute tyranny. They already ignore our constitution in this case, and our efforts over the past 20 years proving. But the times, they are changing. There is a new sheriff in town. The swamp is being drained, the people are rising, and the resisters of the law will be tried in a court of law for treason. In a republic, a constitution or charter of rights protects certain unalienable rights that cannot be taken away by the government. Even if it has been elected by a majority of voters, in a democracy, the majority is not restrained in this way and can impose its will on the minority. Although we chose most of our representatives and local heads and states and judges democratically, they're all governed by the law of the land, which restricts their powers and jurisdictions in order to conform to the will of the people through the Constitution by authority vested in the people via natural law, therein God. Unlimited democracy is just like oligarchy, a tyranny spread over a large number of people, Aristotle. In a 1786 letter to the Marquis de Lafayette, George Washington wrote about the risks of democracy. He didn't believe that most people could be trusted to make good decisions. Thomas Jefferson said, "Democracy is nothing more than mob rule, where 51% of the people may take away the rights of the other 49%. Benjamin Franklin said, "Democracy is two wolves and a lamb voting on what to have for lunch. Liberty is a well-armed lamb contesting the votes." James Madison, the father of the Constitution, said, "Democracy is evil because it allows the will of many to trample the rights of the few. Democracies have been found incompatible with personal security or the rights of property, and in general been as short in their lives as they have been violent in their deaths." Benjamin Rush thought democracy was devilish, stating, "A simple democracy is the devil's own government." Hamilton said, "We are a republican government. Real liberty is never found in despotism or in the extremes of democracy. The ancient democracies in which the people themselves deliberated never possessed one good feature of government. Their very character was tyranny, their figure deformity. If we incline too much to democracy, we shall soon shoot into monarchy." A monarchy. John Adams said, "Democracy will soon degenerate into an anarchy, such an anarchy that every man will do what is right in his own eyes, and no man's life or property or reputation or liberty will be secure, and every one of these will soon mold itself into a system of subordination of all the moral virtues and intellectual abilities, all the powers of wealth, beauty, wit, and science, to the wanton pleasures, the capricious will, and the execrable cruelty of one or very few. Remember, democracy never lasts long. It soon wastes, exhausts, and murders itself. There never was a democracy yet that did not commit suicide." John Marshall said, "Between a balanced republic and a democracy, the difference is like that between order and chaos." John Jay said, "Too many love pure democracy dearly. They seem not to consider that pure democracy, like pure rum, easily produces intoxication, and with a thousand mad pranks and fooleries." John Quincy Adams said, "The experience of all former ages hath shown that of all human governments, democracy was the most unstable, fluctuating, and short-lived." Edmund Burke said, "Of this I am certain, that in a democracy, the majority of the citizens is capable of exercising the most cruel oppression upon the minority." Winston Churchill said, "The best argument against democracy is a five-minute conversation with the average voter." Stop calling us a democracy. As President Trump said, "In America, the people govern, the people rule, and the people are sovereign. I was elected not to take the power, but to give power to the American people where it belongs. The problem is that the people don't know how to take and implement that power. Thomas Jefferson said, "I know no safe depository of the ultimate powers of society but the people themselves. And if we think them not enlightened enough to exercise their control with a wholesome discretion, the remedy is not to take it from them, but to inform their discretion by education. This is the true corrective of abuses of constitutional powers. If a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. An enlightened citizenry is indispensable for the proper functioning of a republic. Self-government is not possible unless the citizens are educated sufficiently to enable them to exercise oversight. It is therefore imperative that the nation see to it that a suitable education be provided for all its citizens. Educate and inform the whole masses of the people. They are the only sure reliance for the preservation of our liberty." Join us at nationallibertyalliance.org to learn the science of government by consent and receive the power, your heritage. Join our campaign for constitutional sheriffs. Go to nationallibertyalliance.org/county-sheriff-project. Join us to save a republic by learning the science of government by consent. Come to our weekly live open forums every Monday, 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. Take our free civics course. Learn real American history. Take our government by consent course. Learn how to file a court case. Learn the difference between law and equity. Learn the Constitution. Learn natural law, also known as common law. Learn the true meaning of liberty. Learn how we, the people, can reinstate our natural law courts of justice. As Thomas Jefferson said, if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. An enlightened citizenry is indispensable for the proper functioning of a republic. Self-government is not possible unless the citizens are educated sufficiently to enable them to exercise oversight. It is therefore imperative that the nation see to it that a suitable education be provided for all its citizens. Educate and inform the whole mass of the people. They are the only sure reliance for the preservation of our liberty. Okay, we're going to take questions. If anybody has any questions or comments, corrections concerning the subject matter this evening, we're going to start off with that, and then we'll move into the next part of our program and eventually back into an open forum on any subject matter. We have one person in the queue, so we only have one question. If anybody else has something, well, we have a second person now. If anybody wants to get into the queue, *6 and a 1. To get into the queue for questions or comments, corrections. Okay, Heatherly, you seem to be the first one into the queue. You got the mic. Go right ahead.
Right. I have two questions for you, John. One that's kind of pending right now is where specifically in the Constitution states the unlawfulness to extort property tax, and if not paid, to extort the property itself? Where is it that it really nails that to the ground?
Well, of course, you know, nothing with that kind of ability of taxes is in there. The one thing that is in the Constitution that clarifies it is that no direct taxes shall be taken. A direct tax is a tax directly on the head of the individual or the property of the individual.
Is that is that 18 U.S.C. 654 on page 192 of your book?
It may be, you know, it has been codified, okay, but we should go right to the Constitution. I know lawyers love to go to the codes and stuff, but we the people need to go to the Constitution to be more specific.
Right, that's why I'm asking you. Where is it?
Yeah, I'm taking a look right now to see exactly where it
okay.
is. I'll tell you what. Gerard, I don't know if you have a copy of the Constitution with you. Maybe you can breeze through that as we take the next question and then we can come back to that.
I do have a second question.
Okay. Hey, give me 1 second. Let me just breeze through here real quickly, see if I can pick it up quickly, that no direct tax. I think it's in, let's see, be in Article 1, I think, and I think it was in Section 9 or 10, maybe. Here it is. Yeah, it's in Article 1, Section 9. Let me see, 2, 3. It looks like, I believe it's the fourth clause, and it says, no captation or other direct tax shall be laid unless in proportion to the census or enumeration herein before directed to be taken. And what that means is that if a tax is to be put onto an individual or, in some way on an individual, the only way they can do it, they got to find an indirect way to do it. And the only way they can do it is to require the state. So if the federal government needs to get some money up, they can put a direct tax out, which maybe is a dollar on the head of every individual or $10 on the head of every individual. Mm-hmm. So if there's 1 million people and that's $10 million income coming into the federal government for whatever purposes. And, of course, they'd have to have a constitutional purpose of spending that money in order for looking for that money. So that is one of the ways they can get the tax. So the state would be responsible to collect that tax and give it over to the federal government. But it wouldn't
is
be directed
that how they
to
finagled
the
that land tax benefit?
Hold on. It wouldn't be directed to the people directly. What it would be is they would collect their taxes in a lawful way, a legal way, for instance, through maybe a sales tax. So on the sales tax that they may collect, they may then then have to pay to the federal government X amount of dollars for every individual and so on and so forth. And that is why, and also federal monies that come out and are, divided among the states in different ways, of course, that's why the census is so important, and the Constitution requires a census. I believe it's every 10 years. And we should participate with that. But giving them no more information than the number of people in our household and the subject, nothing else to talk about.
Doesn't the tax have to be equal?
Oh yes, it has to be exactly the same.
No, they can't base it on the property, the value of the property.
Of course not. No.
And the same thing with the income tax. It's graduated. That makes it unconstitutional right there.
Well, income tax period is unconstitutional. It's a direct tax. A direct tax is directly upon the people where they have no way to pass it. You see, when you tax a corporation, okay, they can pass it on to the people inside the price of the product, and you can avoid paying taxes to that system by just not buying the product. So there are ways to avoid it. Once you put a tax on property, for instance, well, you no longer own the property, because the day you stop paying those taxes is the day they come to take your house away.
Exactly. That's what I need you to address, because that's really unconstitutional. But the Constitution saying that the land is the people and the people are the land. And they have no right to do that.
Correct. And on top of that, if you take the income tax, for instance, okay, and if you don't pay that, they have debtors' prisons. We don't have debtors' prison in the United States to begin with. And you can't tax a man's sweat. You can't tax a man's work. That's a direct tax. So any taxes has got to be in a way that's not direct and that people can avoid it if they don't want to pay into it. Okay, but it's not buying a product or something of that nature. And people have the right to barter. So, the taxes wouldn't even apply to a bartering system. And as far as the sales tax is concerned. But anyway, sales tax is reasonable. It's usually, my county, it's 8.25, so 8.25%. That simple phrase right there in the Constitution, again, in Article 1, Section 9, Clause 3-4, no captation or direct tax. That's a direct tax. No,
and that's property. That's what I'm focusing on right here.
Property and everything, yeah.
It's like you said, Gerard, for the property, it can't be graduated, whereas in property tax, the assessor assesses it every year, and while you're sleeping, they adjust that amount and it changes.
What was that? I missed that.
I know for a fact that they can't reassess you unless you've done improvements. They have to reassess everybody in an area if they're going to do a recapitulation or whatever you want to call it. So you got, and sometimes they do it, and the people let them get away with it.
Because you don't let the tax people in your house either. You know, my father, I remember many, many years ago, my father moved out to Pennsylvania and he bought a house, my mother and my father, and they did renovations on it, on the interior, and the tax wanted, the people wanted to come in, you know, the tax, whatever they call them, tax
assessors.
Assessors. They wanted to come in to look. He said, no, can't come in. And they never did get in. So they couldn't assess it any further than what it was, you know.
Yeah, it's just that even reassessing, just the whole thing of the taxation and taking of the land and raising that, it's blackmail because they keep raising it and raising it until they tax you out of your home.
Absolutely.
And next thing you know, you're living under a bridge.
Look, at people don't realize how bad it really is. They know it's bad, and they're starting to really feel the pressure. You know, gas is getting out of control. Everything, prices for everything, food's not available, all kinds of problems and situations, you know. And I was listening, I don't know if anybody's been listening lately to, I think it's a Christian Patriot, the last three or four days, really, really powerful programs, and it looks like things may be heating up now. And X-22, Dave on X-22 also reports on some of this stuff, and some of this thing may be coming from him. But particularly he played, going back to the Christian Patriot, he played a 15-minute video, okay? And the information that was on that video, well, it was actually a lot longer than that. He just played a piece of it. And many of us is aware of a lot of the stuff that's on that stuff, but he gave a different perspective and a different focus and laid out, you know, how it is that all these select families control everything. They own everything. They even, you know, they own the stocks, and they own Facebook, they own Google, they own YouTube, they own all the pharmaceutical companies, they own the Bar Association, they own everything. It's like they own 90% of the world, okay? Mm-hmm. All of the major corporations, they have tons and tons of properties and other things that they own. And where did they get it from? They stole it from us. There are trillions of dollars of property and gold and silver and all kinds of things. So you see, when the time comes that we finally take things back, you know, you got to return what was stolen back to the people because it goes to the people. It can't go to the government. That doesn't even make any sense at all. We're the government. We the people. So what is that going to do when that is all finally seized and brought back to the American people? You can see how you know that all mortgages are going to be forgiven. All the credit cards are going to be forgiven. All debts. A jubilee throughout the land is the answer and the solution. You know, years ago I thought that a jubilee was too focus too much on the Bible, that people would never get involved or think that way. But clearly, you know, there is no other way than the biblical principle of a jubilee, where everything is returned back to its place where it came from. And we've suffered, and our parents have suffered, and our grandparents have suffered. Of course, we've suffered a lot more because we're deeper into the heat of the problem here. You know, for them, of course, they were robbed. You know, as soon as they started the income tax, and as soon as they started the tax on the homes and different things of that nature, only taking control of all the corporations, and just, you know, look at, we should have other fuel sources other than gasoline through oil. You know, there's lots of energy sources that we could have had and expanded on. You know, electric in itself should be free. We had the technology, or we're on a line or the borderline of having the technology of being able to give free electricity. I think once things fall, and it can happen no other way, and the people have to get up and say something if it doesn't go the right way, it has to come back to the people. Okay, that brings an economy so powerful, so strong. And it's not just the people of the United States that have been ripped off. These people have ripped off people in many, many other countries. They, too, deserve a piece of the pie according to, you know, how things work out, how things are structured. But, of course, the United States, they will hold the biggest part of the pie because the biggest part of the economy and all of these different things stem from the United States. The gold and silver have to be returned. That was stolen. So, I mean, there's going to be so much debt forgiving, and things are going to turn around. Fuel will drop down, and other sources will come about. When I read through it, I don't know if that's a true thing or not. I have not been able to find it. I know it's referred to as legislation, and I hear stories in the background about it. You know, the military did something with it, and blah, blah, blah. I don't want to get into the stories. But when I read through it, it is so logical, so obvious, it can be no other way. So the process that laid out in that that particular document, yes, I think, and more than that, really, a lot more than that. I think we're going to get to a point where electricity will be free. Think about all of the stocks that they own, okay? Now, once it's taken away from them, it goes back to the people, you know, what can we do with that? I mean, there are people still making lots of money in the corporations. People have ownership in the corporations. The corporations have CEO. People are working. There's product being produced, so on and so forth. But then you have the profits that have been going to these particular madmen who have destroyed this nation, these 100 families or so that control the whole world and the money, the economy of the world. Well, that will come back to the people, and it could come back in numerous forms. I don't even know. I can only guess, but I can imagine one of the forms is, why should we have to pay for electricity? You know, it should be free.
Exactly.
And there are other things in the utilities that should be free also. You know, access into whatever entertainment we do watch and use on our televisions or whatever, on our computers and so on. And there's lots of other things. The reduction of pricing of things. There's just lots of things. I'm telling you, I can see, you can just forecast it. Once this whole mess is cleaned up and done with, the economic growth greater than has ever been seen anywhere in the world, many times more, will take place at that point in time.
Hey,
now, do you think that... Oh, go ahead, Gerard. I just had a question to follow up.
One of the things that puts it in perspective really well for me is that, and I've heard it said, and I don't know who said it, but they said our rights are couched in property rights in America.
Uh-huh.
And you cannot tax private property
uh-huh.
because your first piece of property is your body. Think
That's
about
right.
that. So what's that
and
saying?
And they tax that with income, huh?
Well, it just puts it in perspective. Why? What are you doing taxing my private property? My body is also my private product. Mm-hmm. Of course, we wouldn't be getting these injections and stuff. They wouldn't be able to tell us that if they understood that our bodies are our property, our private property. And
see, when they made us into a corporation, though, Gerard, they own us. They think
they
own it. They annex us into
that
the corporation.
Your DNA with the shot and all this baloney, that's not going to hold up in court.
Uh-uh.
That's all smoke and mirrors. When you get back to basic fundamentals, first of all, we're not really a corporation because there was no meeting of the minds. I didn't sign a contract with them, did you?
Exactly.
Huh? And,
exactly.
And if I signed it, did I do it with full disclosure? Hell no.
Well, you couldn't even have signed the contract anyway because the signing of the contract would be giving up your rights and you can't sell or give away your rights. You can choose not to exercise them.
Well, even especially today, they do it at birth. You don't have a right to give away your stuff before you're of age.
Right.
You know, I mean, if you put some common sense to it, it turns into the smoke that it is, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And with these, with the property, you know, the stealing of the property, it's like the stealing of America because even with these businesses going down and people's livelihoods going down and they're being fired, they're not going to be able to stay in their homes for the property tax. And that's a devious plot and plan against America to take the land, the ground, the earth, the dirt under our feet. And this is a, I just feel it's a major point in hand. And with all the joinders cases under National Liberty Alliance, when that comes about, there's a lot of property involved in that, in those cases.
Absolutely.
And
all those homes have to be returned. And if that's an mm-hmm. impossibility, then some kind of... compensation in money, of course, needs to be And also pain and suffering for these people, the loss of home, the trauma going through being homeless, that kind of thing. It's huge.
Living in a car because they took their home.
Yeah, it's just huge. So, and we do intend on pushing that forward. And of course, as you know, National Liberty Alliance really has put this whole thing together, but is really the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, which is really the pinnacle of that whole process through the court cases here in, into, you know, the U.S. Supreme Court, which, by the way, we have been filing papers. We had filed papers with them. We haven't filed papers in a while. We do have to kind of catch up, and we have some papers that we need to file in that have been, you know, part of the process for a while. But one of the things, and I don't know where it's at, I'll have to talk with Jim about it, we're looking to do a habeas corpus for, I think it's, I don't know how many people it is, X amount of people that were arrested out there in Washington, D.C. on
January 6th, okay. Right.
And I don't know where that's at. I hope that's going, moving forward, because we're going to take that right to the United States Supreme Court. We're going to put it on their doorway. We're going to send the habeas corpus to them, and let's see what they do with those habeas corpuses. Let's see if they do what the courts that they're responsible for underneath, you know, the federal judiciary, they're responsible for those courts. You know, it is up to the United States Supreme Court to correct the errors and the problems and all of the, you know, the unlawful things that have taken place. First of all, first and foremost, let's start with the rules of the court. Totally unconstitutional, unlawful. It is repugnant to our Constitution in many, many ways. And what they did is they took the rules of the common law, which is the rules of the court, okay, that was for equity and law, and they just cast them out the door and put these rules in. And the rules are unlawful. They're repugnant. They control evidence. Judges get to put things into the case that they'll allow, and it just goes on and on and on.
Well, they have unduly beaten these people, too, and put them in isolation, so some of them have nearly gone mad. But I do know that Jim is waiting for you, John, on that.
I'm totally unaware of anyone waiting for me at this point. I know.
Well,
Jim's
waiting to put that case together, and then we'll do it.
Well, yeah, as soon as I get that paper, we'll do something. I'd like to do something right away with it. So I'll talk with Jim to see if he has anything done or anything. I mean, you know, a lot of people will drop things on my boxes and send
I don't. Well, I was going to help him with it, but I think he's waiting for some things from you. So
okay, all right. Okay.
All right. And thanks. Really quick, do you know anything about the QTAM action, QTAM, QUITAM action, that legal action? QTAM?
I'm not aware.
QTAM?
I don't know what you're talking about. Gerardi,
it's to initiate the process, a private citizen referred to as a relator files the complaint in the United States District Court. The complaint must be filed in camera and remain under seal for at least 60 days, during which time all information contained within the complaint must be kept confidential from outside parties, including the defendant. The relator is required by law to serve a paper to complain of the complaint, as well as a written disclosure statement detailing all pertinent information of the relator's possession upon the United States government. Once these steps have been taken, the United States is granted a mandatory 60-day period to investigate the relator's allegations and decide whether to intervene in the lawsuit and assume primary responsibility for the litigation. It's a person that takes a paper that comes that is filed by someone who has been wronged against the United States government, as I understand it. And there's just Gary is working with.
Who structured the process?
This is an action.
Yeah, but is this legislative construction? Is this, I don't know.
So let me send it to you through an email so you can just take a look at it, because we're Gary Willen and I are trying to help Ken with this. Okay.
Okay.
And, yeah.
All right. The best thing, let me see. All right. Send it to, you know what? Send it to mail, M-A-I-L, at nationallibertyalliance.org. And you know what? Gerard will get a copy, Jan will get a copy, and others will get a copy of that then.
So and what is it? The I don't know that one. The what?
Mail.
This info?
M-A-I-L.
Oh, mail.
Mail.
Okay. I will.
Mm-hmm. All right.
All right. Thank you. I yield.
Gerard, when that comes through, if you have time to look at that, and then you know, maybe you and I can have a conversation about it.
Right.
Okay?
Listen, I wanted to make an announcement earlier.
Yeah, go right ahead.
You know, we made an appeal for prayers for my sister. I wanted to just say a few words. She did pass away on Thursday. I've been on the phone fighting with these guys. We actually hired a advocate off of Dr. Artis's site. I don't know if everybody's familiar with that, but she was very, very good. What was nice about her is she just sat in the background and let us present what we, you know, we kind of brushed over the things that they did wrong and the things that we wanted that they kept refusing us, and demanded them that if they're going to refuse us, they need to give it to us in writing, which they don't like to do. And there's the Expanded Use Act, the CARES Act. And it's a federal act, and it's kind of like convoluted, but the beginning of it basically says that a patient can try these things if they want, and they can't refuse it. So that's a federal statute. So we accused them of breaking that statute. And it took us a week to get through their phone system to get up to the CEO, the CFO, chief financial, chief. He's a doctor, though. He's the one that runs all the doctors, and there's only one office above him, and that's the stockholders, the whatever they call them, the ones that make the decision, and they understand lawsuits, they understand liability. The CFO may or may not, because he's not into that. He's into more, you know, determining what the doctors are doing. You know, they tie these doctors' hands with these protocols, and that's what killed my sister, was the protocol. You know, when she went in there, she went in with a 60 to 70 oxygen. She shouldn't even been conscious. So
let me make a point here. These are protocols, and if you're pursuing the lawsuit on this, you have to get everyone involved, which means goes to the creators of those protocols right up the line.
Oh, absolutely. And everybody who initiated them, whether they know it or not. That's
right.
Nuremberg.
They're part of the case. You got to bring them in.
That's right. Look, anybody that stuck a needle or did anything like that, you can't say, I was just following orders. That's what they said in Nuremberg. And guess what? It didn't hold up then, and it's not going to hold up now. There is going to be a tribunal of Nuremberg, too, that's coming over this whole COVID thing and the horrible stuff that they did to people. And I experienced it firsthand. When she went in there originally, we said, we don't want a vent. So we signed an order against the vent, and we don't want what's the name of that medicine that shuts your kidneys down? That Fauci and the CDC said that these are the things that you'll use. Remvezidor,
something like that.
Yeah, Remvezidor. Anyway,
yeah,
you all know what I'm talking about. So,
yep.
She signed it when she first went in. Next thing we know, My nephew, the one that she put in control, who wasn't the oldest boy, it was the middle boy, he went in and she told him, they gave me Remdesivir. I took it because they told me it was the only thing that was going to save me. And they shouldn't. And when we called them up, we said, what are you doing? You didn't ask us. They said, well, she cleared it. What do you mean she cleared it? I said, look, I was talking to her the day that she got that, and I could testify to the fact that she was not of right mind and that she was confused. You can see it in my conversation. So if you gave it to her on that day, plus we already signed an order, you have no right to go back to her. And what they do is they let them go in distress. Maybe they turn their oxygen or their saturation down, and they go, well, you got to take this because you're going to die. They do this. You know why? Because they get in that particular hospital, that Ranvedor is an extra $5,000 when they put you through that, and a guaranteed 5-day stay. It's all about the money. It's all about the money. If they die on that vent, they get an extra, I don't know what it was, $39,000. So it's all profit driven. They don't care. And you know, my sister worked for that hospital. There were nurses in there crying because they knew her. You know, you would think that they would have given her better care. And so, you know, they gave her the Remdesivir. And then the other thing that happened is she's in a ICU, and she's on 60. If they turn the machine off, her oxygen would not maintain 60%. They could get her up to 90-something percent with high-pressure oxygen. But before she was on that, they were just giving her the mask. Well, I don't know where everybody was, but she got out of bed. Maybe she wanted to go to the bathroom. And she hit the floor. She threw up. They found her on the floor in her vomit with no heartbeat, no respirations. They had a CPR her back. They intubated her. Of course, they end up putting her on the vent at that point because basically she was dead. So I don't know if she would have ever, if she even came out of it, if she would have ever, you know, she probably would have had problems, you know, for the rest of her life. If I don't know how long she was down, but if you got to, I'm experienced first responder. When we have to do CPR, you got less than a 20% chance of that person coming back and not having problems, but living. So they caused that. There's no way. They're supposed to have alarms on the bed. So when we finally got up to this head CFO and we started talking to him, then we found out my sister has a dairy allergy, and they're giving her a dairy food thing, you know, for food. And we said, my nephew said, she can't be, she's allergic to soy and dairy. And he said, well, we don't see any allergies there. This guy decided that it was okay to give her dairy. Now, she knows that she's allergic to dairy and that it makes mucus, and it always goes in. She has asthma, my sister. That was her co-intermittent thing. She was a little overweight and she had asthma. And before she knew it was COVID, she's like, I got to make sure I don't eat any dairy because I'm getting sick and it goes into pneumonia if I eat dairy. Well, these jackasses got her on a dairy food replacement. I mean, how much damage did that do? And then he says, when my nephew told them about it, they wouldn't take her off it. And when we were talking to the doctor, he said, we don't see any signs of an allergy. So he decided right there in his office with no testing or anything that she wasn't allergic to dairy. That is an assault right there. He does not have the power to do that. Based on what, Dr. Eisenbach, you know what I mean? He can't make that decision there. They should have taken her off and found a substitute. Well, we fought and fought with them. So we finally got the meeting, and what happened is before the meeting, the night before the meeting, they called the sons. They said, you better come in. She's crashing. They ran up there. It was 9 o'clock at night, and by the time they got there, her oxygen was come back, but it was a scare. So we're meeting with him on a Thursday. We were calling him on that Thursday, and he said, well, I want the doctor to be present and this and that, and that's Monday. And we said, what? That's 5 days from now. She doesn't have 5 days, maybe. You know, how do you know she has 5 days? You don't know, you know? And it turned out she didn't have 5 days. So when we went through all the stuff that they did and talked in a manner, we didn't say lawsuit, but basically we did. And he got very quiet after that, very, very subdued, because he realized that his goose was cooked on numerous, numerous things. You know, it wasn't one thing. It was four or five things that they did. And so we said, look, we want intravenous vitamin C. I want 50,000 milligrams. That's the protocol. I said, I'll give you the protocol that they're using, that the frontline doctors use. So after we had that call, she needed a blood transfusion.
Maybe you can get that written up for us, the frontline doctors, what they should, the proper protocol on that, and we'll post it so people can have that.
Oh, yeah, I have it. Yeah, I have it. I can send it to you.
Get that to me. Drop it in my Skype, and I'll go through. I'd like to have it myself.
Right.
I'm sure if anything happens in my family, these doctors follow.
And even Dr. Artist has a protocol on his site, which is very similar. And there's quite a few of them. Dr. Zielinski is very good. He's been healing people right and left using his protocol. And there's, look at, there is all kinds of answers out there. They got everybody scared with this COVID that they created. And then my sister did not get the shot, and that was the other reason they treated her like a second-class citizen. But she works in the healthcare field as a radiologist, and everybody that came in there had the vaccine, and I think she got the shedded spike protein, and that's why she had microclots in her lungs and all this other horrible stuff. Even though she called the frontline doctors, got a prescription for ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, and budesonide, which sometimes just the budesonide stops it. They've taken people off of respirators with just the budesonide. Well, she had that. She went through a week of that, felt much better, went through all the ivermectin in the 5 days or whatever it was, and she felt great immediately. Within 24 hours, she said, oh, I got the COVID beat. But she was mistaken. You know what? You ever hear the saying, if you're gonna doctor yourself, you have a fool for a patient? Well, that's what happened to her, because when I talked to her, I said, look, you got to get back on the ivermectin and the hydroxychloroquine. She said, no. She said, I already killed the COVID. I just have to deal with this asthma that's in my lungs. But she didn't realize what's in her lungs were microclots caused by the spike protein, and she needed something like ivermectin and or hydroxychloroquine to break that up, that there was nothing they were going to give her that was going to cure that. And she was of the mistaken idea that she beat the virus, and it's really not a virus. I mean, I can get into a whole thing. It's
a bacteria.
Yeah, and it's also what they inject in you. It's a poison, too, and the body's reacting to it, and it's throwing it out. Throws out exosomes, and they say, oh, look, it's a virus. No, it's not. That's the body throwing off the poison, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And so I could go on and on, but the fact is once we had that call and he realized that they were in mm-hmm. such bad shape, he comes in, he starts to intervene his vitamin C. We told him we wanted her on NAC because her organs had been failing, but that's a good one to bring the red blood cells. See, her red blood cells is what killed her because the spike protein got in there. They couldn't carry oxygen. So he, you know what he gave her on the intravenous vitamin C? 1,500 milligrams. My goodness.
Mm.
15. I take 10,000 when I'm sick. And the protocol says at least 50,000 a day. Yeah. And work mm-hmm. your way up from there. So they just were placating and playing with us. And then they ordered a blood transfusion. It took 5 hours to come in. She should have had it a week before because her numbers were, you know, I think when you need a transfusion, if you get down to like 7, I think it is, 6 or 7, and she was 1 point away from that, like a point, you know, like she was like 7.1, and they would not give her that transfusion. That was mm-hmm. so egregious and ridiculous. So then, last minute, they put it in, and then all of a sudden, her lungs started failing, and she did pass. So I wanted to thank everybody that did pray for her, and I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot to be done here. I'm very busy. I'm a little distracted right now with all this stuff. I mean, I've been on the phone for over a week straight trying to, there was problems in the family, too, because there was pride. And my nephew didn't want to give up control, and he thought he knew what he was doing. He went in there with his girlfriend who works for a big health company, and the CEO of that company said he would help us and get an investigator. Well, most guys, you know, if you're going to get somebody like that to help you, it takes them weeks and months before they get anything off the ground.
Yeah.
And I knew it was a pipe dream, and they crashed and burned. And he came back with his tail between his legs finally and said, I don't want to do it. You guys do it, because he realized that he was too young. He didn't have enough life experience to fight with these guys, and they're giving him pipe dream stories. And I dare say that there was some Stockholm syndrome where you get friendly with your captors. And I actually at one point pulled all the stops out, and I accused them of that. I said, look, you guys got Stockholm syndrome. You're hanging on all the baloney. Oh, look, her oxygen is up 0.2%. Yeah, but what happens when they unhook it? And they need to be unhooking that thing every day, trying to get her off of that, because the longer you're on that machine, the more chances that you're not going to come off. Your lungs will not start working on their own. They get lazy. You know, and you can't, and they have to keep you anesthetized, so that, because you'll struggle with that, all that stuff down your throat. So that is not a way to heal. Being in a drug-induced coma is not the best way to get the immune system back to shape. Yeah. And that's what they do. So you got about 1 million strikes against you when you're laying there on a respirator. And some people have gotten off the respirator, pulled the tubes out, and survived. And they gave them alternative therapies like ivermectin and budesonide, and got them out of there. Unfortunately, my sister was not one of those. So I got a lot of stuff going on with these guys, and I need to sit down and get my thoughts together and get some papers together. But you know what? It's something that everybody on here should know about, because they lie and they lie and they tell all kinds of stories, and it's very egregious. And you better have things set up before you going to the hospital today is like back at the turn of the century when they were killing people in the hospitals, when they were still bleeding people and nobody wanted to go to the hospital because they were afraid. It's as bad or worse than that now. Mm-hmm. People that have cancer and diabetes and that, they're not going in because they're afraid. And they're dying from their cancer and diabetes, not from COVID. They're dying because they're afraid to go to the hospital, because the hospital is now a jail. You know, they don't, you know. And if you pull them out of the hospital, they ostracize you. They will not cover that bill, the insurance company. They will not never let you back in that hospital. All kinds of evil things in their protocols or whatever it is, their policies to prevent you, to dissuade you from pulling that person out of there. She would have been better off at home on hospice with those machines in her house, because we could have controlled what she was getting in. But it was too little too late. And look, she didn't even have a medical power of attorney for her son. And they told him, we can't give you that paper. He's her son, and he's the healthcare proxy. And they didn't want to give us the records. Oh, and the other thing that was at the meeting, I said, doctor, how come the day that you gave her the remdesivir, there's no oxygen stats or anything? Everything is blank. Did somebody erase those because they didn't want to make it obvious that you got her to approve it when she was down to 60 oxygen? Right there, they hung themselves, you know?
Wow.
So there's all kinds of things in this case. It's disgusting, but that's the way it is. And that's what I've been going through all week. That's why I've been, like, missing in action here, because I've been trying to do that. So people, take note. Educate yourself. There is treatment, and there's good treatment. And you need to get that first. And my sister even got the treatment, but she didn't understand that she needed to continue it. And when she tried to get a hold of those frontline doctors, they're very hard to get a hold of. And so when you have an emergency like that, you better have an alternative to that. You know, maybe she could have got a hold of Dr. Zelenko. He's local to New York here. But it just didn't happen. And she put the wrong – she should have had – more people. She should have had, like, me as her healthcare proxy or as an alternate, you know, so that I could have guided her son, who's in his early 20s, you know what I mean? He just was not, you know, it's like putting a kid up to do a general's job, you know what I mean? And he just didn't have the wherewithal to meet them in battle. And I'll tell you what, the private advocate that we hired from Dr. I forget his name there. I haven't seen your moment. She was very good, very, very good. So, you know, it was like I beat the doctor up. My nephew got courage, and he beat the doctor up and said some other stuff. And, boy, then she came in and wrapped it up in a ball. By the time we left that meeting, that guy was like, oh, we're going to get sued, man. I mean, we never said the word sue. You know, I said things like, well, I can testify to the fact that she was not of a right mind when you gave her that, because I have emails, I have text messages from her. So I think it finally clicked in. But you see, all that happened on Thursday should have happened. She was 14 days on that respirator. It should have happened 14 days before that. Mm. And then maybe she would have lived. So I just want to give everybody that heads up and make sure that you have your paperwork before you go in.
Yeah, make sure you get us that protocol, or frontline protocol, so that people can have that in their hands and force the hospitals if they have that situation.
It's
also
very, very important information to have. And this is what's going on in the nation right now, this eugenic thing to kill. You know, they have 250 million people that have taken this shot. And if they don't, and there is things that they can do to keep themselves alive, but most of them will never know, and they'll never get it. And when they start dropping dead, it's going to be terrible. They're going to drop dead all over the place. It's going to create chaos. And you know, they didn't want autopsies, and the reason they didn't want autopsies is because Italy is the first one that did them, and they said, look, this thing is not what you're saying it is. The blood is coagulating in the lungs. You know? So,
yep.
I'm going to pass the mic over to you shortly. We got a couple more people in the queue here before we do that, though. Has anyone seen Brent, by the way?
I haven't been paying attention.
All right, why don't you wrap up and then
I'm done. I've said enough. I could go on forever, but I'm done.
I know.
I mean, look, the information's all out there. Maybe I'll throw some links in there that we can post that people can go educate themselves. Because nobody's going to do this for you. You have to do it yourself. I mean, even to hire the experts to save you, you have to know what you're talking about. You have to know what to ask for. If you don't know anything, then you're throwing yourselves in their hands. And if you happen to get a good one, that's okay. But you might not. You really need to know what the issues are, and what the.
And you need to know fast enough, Gerard. From my experience and the people that have dropped dead around me, it's because they didn't have the information or the tools fast enough. And if they would have, by the time they got a clue, or even it dawned on them what the emergency was in their body, or the fact that there's blood, it comes to a blood clotting situation in your lungs and it suffocates you. If you don't do something about that, because these machines just kill you. Once they put you on them, you're dead. And even the doctors are telling you that. I mean, there was a doctor that came right out and said, if he's put on one of these machines, he's going to be dead. And he was within. But the thing about it is with the ivermectin, you have to have it in your hand. You can't send for it or try to get it after the fact. You have to have it in your hand. You have to have the hydroxychloroquine in your hand. You have to already have it made, because if you wait the days, it begins to work in your system, and then you have this false thing, like you think you're cured. And it comes back like a vengeance.
Well, how do you go about getting that into your hands?
Well, you can order.
Well, you can make. You can order.
Okay. What we'll do, Gerard, why don't you go through all this and get it to me? We'll get this information up, because I'd like to have it in my hands also. And
you
I'd
can
like
make that. Hydroxychloroquine, by the way. You
well,
can make it.
Well,
there's a
listen,
recipe.
The vitamin quercetin is what it's made out of.
Yeah,
and it's cheap, and you can get that and start taking that. You should be taking that today.
Okay, let's move on here. We got three or four people in the queue on a subject. Let's get back to the subject, and then we're going to come back to this subject again.
Okay.
But let's get that information together and get it to me personally, and I'll create a page or something, and we'll put it up there somewheres. So we do have a health area. Okay, let's take our next question. Thanks a lot, Heather. Let's take our next individual.
Welcome.
Let's see. It is Linda from Virginia. You got the mic. Go right ahead, Linda.
Hi. How is everyone?
Good. How you doing, Linda?
Okay. Mine's kind of short, but in about 6 hours, I'm going to vote. I went to vote this morning because I thought it was Tuesday, and I got to the parking lot and it was all empty, and I immediately realized that I was a day ahead of time, so I get to do it again. But
anxious, huh?
I am anxious. No, well, let me jump to that. How about Virginia? I cannot believe this. I just never thought that Virginia had a chance, because it was all, you know, the government, Richmond and Northern Virginia and Hampton Roads would all, you know, all the government people would go vote, and we'd always, it's a red state. Virginia is a red state, but we're held hostage to, you know, all the blue voters in those areas. And so I just didn't think we had a chance. And lo and behold, I don't know what happened, but apparently Youngkin is out ahead, and hopefully everybody gets out to vote. But that's what I want to talk about. I was thinking, you know, okay, 6 hours, I need to go vote. And then I got to thinking, which friends do I have that vote? And the answer was none. And so I'm like, you know what? All these upstanding people, intelligent, upstanding people, and none of them vote. They don't even think about it. They don't talk about it.
Remember, we have government not by the majority, but by the majority that participates. That's number one. Number two, and we must do this. We cannot have a republic unless we do this. A republic will just never get back up on its feet, and that is to get rid of all parties. Now, a lot of people may choke on that and think, oh, that's not possible. Well, it's very much possible. We just looked at that particular idea just tonight to some degree and the other night concerning the fact that, I don't know, we may not have done the one, we may have done in the past, maybe we'll do it again, which looks at makes the case against the Bar Association, not the Bar Association, but the parties, the two-party system. Gotta go. We cannot have it.
You know what I tell people? I tell people I'm with the party of we the people. That's mm-hmm. who I'm with. And I'm an independent.
Jefferson put it back in his day when the separation, you know, they were trying to make the separation because, you know, his movement that he was working with was called like the anti-movement, the anti-federalist. And it wasn't called federalist papers back in those days, but they were called federalists, the people who wanted a federal government. And the anti-federalist was almost presumptuous by the name that was thought, well, they didn't want the federal government. Nothing could be further from the truth, of course. And but the point is when Jefferson became elected, he made that point. We're all Federalists, every one of us. We're all Republicans. Forget about anything else. You know, being a Republican is not a party. Being a Republican is being part of a process, a political process that governs us by law. And the law is the law of God, not the law of man. And that is the key, which gives us our unalienable rights and the authority to have government by consent.
But I'm telling you, they do not understand liberty. They just
don't. No. Well, that's why education is important.
And I have decided, I have just now decided that I am going to commit to the 10th Amendment Center sends out these little, the good thing is they're not big, you know, they're just little things about what our forefathers said. And I talk to the young people a lot, you know, like I was...
Yeah, well, you know, that's helpful, but what needs to be done is people need to be creating committees of safety. And the committees of safety, part of the
process... No, these people are nowhere near that. That's what I'm trying to say.
But they don't have to be. They don't have to be. You only need a small number of people to start it off. Let me tell you, the people will gravitate to that understand... And can easily receive the concept of the Committee of Safety. And you will find those people. And remember, look, we can take over. This is a very important point to be made. You know, by, I'd say, 200 people. I mean, and I think we could do it with less people, but it's a lot more work. But with 200 people in my county, we can literally take 100% control of the political process. Because we can work and do the job as the committee man and bypass that whole process. We can also recall anyone that gets in through the political party process that's just the criminal from the right or the criminal from the left. We can take them out of office through recall because we'll have the power and the ability to do that. And that's just
I understand that, you know, you can do both, actually. But mm-hmm. The thing is, I can easily do this with my friends, with my direct friends, you know. I can send them these little 10th Amendment things. It's not enough that they're really going to get that ticked off about it, you know, and it's just little blurbs, and little by little, I think that they will become knowledgeable, you know. So that's from the bottom up. And what you're talking about...
Well, I agree with you. Any way you can educate someone is helpful. But bear in mind, this has got to be a movement. The people have to move in order to take control of our nation again.
But,
and we have to do it
culture,
in
the culture has to be there. You know, I've said it before when, you know, my whole backstory, code enforcement and all that. And, you know, and then so when I started into it, I wasn't hearing anything about the Constitution anywhere. That really struck
me.
Well,
you see, again, there
in
is...
In fact, they
there
tried
is,
to avoid it. They tried
is,
to...
There in
they
is
tried
the
to
problem.
Avoid it. I had friends tell me that the Constitution doesn't exist anymore, and I just said, oh, no, you are so wrong. I said, it exists. Whether it's being treated with disregard or not is another story, you know, but
well,
it
again,
definitely
you know,
exists.
Look, let's look back to this thing with education. This is the key thing. And again, the Committee of Safety, okay, you know, if you've got 200 people working together in a county, you know, there's not that much work that one person is to be piled upon. Everybody has a little bit of work, a couple hours of work to do throughout the month, and then come back, make a report, and the next. But it's important for only we, the people, are going to press it through. We got to require the schools to be teaching civics in the Constitution. And there is a federal law, okay, that requires that every school teach civics, okay? It's the way they worded it, I don't like it, because it's like it's a very minimum amount. All right, but nevertheless, they are required. But the people must demand it. Okay, they must demand it. And if they're not teaching our children these things, then we have to take them out of school. And you know what? I think what's going to be pushed forward is the money's going to follow the children wherever they go. It's not going to be just given to a government-controlled school, you know, a public school. If someone wants to send their child to a private school, then that money should follow that child. And that kind of an issue will be pushed forward and will be successful once we get to the other side. I'm absolutely convinced of that. But I will tell you one thing, okay? The amount of money they give per child to pay for an education, which isn't no education at all, it's a propagandizing of our children, okay? The amount of money that they give, you can send your child to a very good private school for less money than what they're already paying. I think they're paying something like... I think it's $19,000 per child. I don't know whether that's per semester or per year, but that's per child. And I know I sent my children to private school for a while, and I think it was $3,000 or $4,000 a year, and it was an excellent school. And I mean, that was some years ago, 20 years ago, but nevertheless.
I originally went to Catholic school, and I think it. It
yeah, I did too. I went to
made tremendous difference in my life.
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely. But anyway, look, the Committees of Safety makes the changes, and they will grow because when people have a problem, they'll find the Committee of Safety, and once they find the Committee of Safety and they solve the problem, and then they become part of the process to help others. You know, freely you have been given, freely give back, and they should be. You know, that look at when the numbers come together in something like this, that's power. Okay, and so that's what we have to do. Education is the important part. Well, everyone has to be re-educated that's out of school, and our children that are in school have to be properly educated. And it's up to we the people to make sure that happens, because the government will never do it for us. We have to do it. And that's
I'm more focused on like my kids and the younger people who are not getting this stuff. And I was in Cracker Barrel the other night, and the server was young, and I managed to tell him, I said, read the Constitution. I said, it's not that big. Read the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. And I said, take a look at what our forefathers said, any of them. I said, the things that they said were just awesome. You know, how they... And just knew about, you know, they distrusted government. They knew our rights came from God, and just that whole, you know, line of thinking, I guess. And so every opportunity I get, I try to take it and tell them, you know, about it. But anyway, the other lady was talking about property,
mm-hmm.
and I always... that always gets my attention, because I've read that basically freedom, property ensures your freedom. You know, there's lots of things out there written about it, I guess, but there was an analogy how freedom, I forget how they said it. They said freedom is representative of, property, owning property is representative of freedom, you know. So,
well,
but my thing is,
property is your body, and anything that extends forward from that with the sweat of your labor becomes part of your property.
Yeah, it went through this whole thing with owning with private property, mm-hmm. and how that, you know, if you lose that right or whatever, then you're losing your freedom.
Yeah,
you know?
Lose everything, of course, absolutely. If you don't have the ability to own things and to work for things and own them and have control over those things, and if someone else has control over things, then you're not free at all. You just have to answer to someone else.
I was thinking about what she was saying about the taxation and everything. And then I thought, you know, it's funny because they give us these government benefits, the Social Security, Medicare, whatever, everything everybody gets. And then at the same time, they're taxing you on your property. I mean, it's like it's just this one big wash, you know what I mean? Where if that's, of course, they're taking their cut, you know, the government takes their cut out. I think that's what the whole purpose of it is. And so, yeah, it would just be best not to have it at all, you know?
Well,
I mean, why mix up everything? Why be giving you something on one hand and then taking it away on another? It's, you know.
Well, again, the whole thing is about control. Right now they're going through population control. That's what this is all about happening, what we see with this flu or whatever they want to call it. But, you know, they're just destructive, evil people. And everything, look what this guy's doing. I mean, it's not just this guy in the White House. He's just a puppet anyway. But look what they're doing. I mean, the fuel is going up. I see it's like $4 here in my neighborhood right now. And I heard out west in certain areas over $11 a gallon. I mean, that's outrageous.
Well, I can say is I hope they're mad enough to go out and vote. You know, that's what needs to happen.
Yeah, well, again, remember, if the people take control, it doesn't matter who's in office, because the moment they step up and show their ugly face that they're Marxists and they want to destroy this nation, or they want to break their oath, and we can take them out as quick as they can go in. People need to understand that. But one person cannot do that. United we stand, and divided we absolutely shall fall. And so we have to become united, not just our own county. You know, I was talking...
I fully agree with the no party thing.
Absolutely, got to go. Our founding fathers said so. There's no doubt about it. Look at what purpose is the party but to just make arguments and debates in order to get more power and authority over the other side? That's all it's about. Everything has already been decided. There's nothing for them to think. They just have to govern according to the words that we've given them. We've given them certain authorities and certain jurisdictions and certain powers. And they're supposed to exercise those things in those certain areas. No more and no less. There's nothing for them to debate. There's no reason for them to talk about the Second Amendment. That's settled. There's nothing to talk about. Parties will do that because they're trying to destroy. They're going to destroy it back and forth, back and forth. George Washington laid it out. Perfectly clear, okay?
Yeah, I just had a conversation with a woman. She said she was an independent. She said she was libertarian, and then she just changed to independent. And I said, yes.
It doesn't help.
I said, stay independent. I said, you wanna be voting for your family and yourself. No, it doesn't pay at all.
Look, you stay as a no-party person. And that's where people really should go. Forget becoming Republican. Forget about becoming Democrat. Look, I know someone who has moved forward on this thing with the, I forget which party it is. The Conservative Party. And we just took control. Yeah, what, in your town? What good does that do? How are you going to save the nation with that? How many other people are doing that, and how can you save it? Because, you know, these other parties, other than the Republican and Democrats, they have no power or authority anyway. But you know what? Look, forget about the party. We don't need to become part of a party. We can all become notaries. It's very simple to become a notary. And then we can walk papers, and because we're notaries, we're able to sign those papers on behalf of anyone from any party or anybody that's not even in a party to put them onto the ballot. Okay? And we can, that's the move, the beginning of a move to get away from parties. And once we become, and when the other parties that are still operating at the same time alongside bringing in all these criminals on the right or the left, okay, well, as fast as they can bring them in, we can take them out. We can start walking their papers to recall these people. Why? Because they're breaking the law, they're breaking their oaths, or whatever the case may be. We can pull them out as quick as they can pull them in. But only if the people unite. United we stand, divided we fall. One person can't do this. And that's why it is the duty of everyone. And our founding fathers spoke about this duty. You're required to participate. Benjamin Franklin made a big thing about the militia. You need to participate. You need to become whatever it is that you can do. You need to muster together and defend, in that case, of course, the colonies. But now we've got the states. We have a lot to defend here. And we defend it by becoming a part of the Committee of Safety. And we'll rebuild the militia. And bring our courts back to courts of justice and help the people to solve their problems on a local level. We'll take back our local government right up into the counties and into the state, and collectively we will take back the federal. And but again,
committees of safety are basically a state entity, a state
nation. I'm sorry, say that again?
The committees of safety are basically a part of the state.
No, the committees of safety are the people. We're disconnected from anything. Look, we're not involved with politics. We're not involved with genders. We just want the Constitution applied. That's what it's all about. Our founding fathers created a nation through committees of safety. I'm going to be doing a seminar on this very soon. And one of the things we're going to try to do is we're going to broadcast this right in our room here live. It'll be a Saturday afternoon, probably at like noon to 3 or something like that. And anybody, and we'll get plenty of word out as soon as we know where it's going to be. And we're going to endeavor. I don't think there's any reason we can't, at bare minimum, okay, broadcast this live right into our room right here where we're meeting today, where you'll have visual and also audio. And we'll even, if we can set it up, we'll take questions when the time comes, even from the people that are coming in from or through the Internet for this. I'd like to set it up where we can, and again, anybody out there that can help with this that's in New York area that can help with setting this up so that we can get this out in many different ways on different platforms. I'd like to get it on YouTube.
Kind of what the Tea Party thing was supposed to be,
huh?
Sort of? Wasn't that kind of what the Tea Party people were supposed
to be? The Tea Party was a movement never meant to be a political party, and that was politicized and taken over by the Republican Party. I mean, they kind of just seized control over that, and just I don't even know where it went to. And like they do with everything else, they consume it. Well, we the people, once we become a party, we can be consumed. But as long as we stay free and independent and local to our, and focused in our local government, and working our way up from there, and connecting through committees of correspondence, just as our founding fathers did. Paul Revere sat on the Committee of Correspondence. It was his job to take messages from one colony to another colony and back again. And he wasn't the only one. Every one of the colonies had committees of correspondence. Okay, we too need committees of correspondence to communicate county to county, and even across the state, and even state to state. And a National Liberty Alliance will assist in the pivoting of that communications. We don't necessarily will be participating in things of the personal business of the counties, but we can help connect each county to county so that they can communicate on things that they're working on a particular problem. Let's take Agenda 21. Okay, that's going to fall apart real quick anyway. But Agenda 21, that's something that affects every county. We all should be working on that. But then there are local things that maybe just involve a few counties or even counties within a particular state. But then there are things that affect counties from state to state. So anyway, you need to learn about the committees of safety. If you haven't learned, we have plenty of information. It's part of the way to take this nation back, and it is the only way. And I will repeat this. Let me repeat this. It is the only way to to have government by consent. Unless we organized the people from a grassroots level, following the steps of our founding father, and I don't believe it was ever intended that the committees of safety would fall apart. Again, they were taken over and eaten up by this whole process of the New World Order, like they do everything. You know, they don't create anything. They just take things over. They infiltrate and then change it from within. Everything they do that. That's the way they do. So we need to be the people. We need to get out there and do what we have to do, and we have to do it in through the committees of safety. There's no other way, none. I challenge anyone to show me any other way to save this nation other than for the people on the grassroots to step up and take control of their government right there on the grassroots, because there is no other way.
Well, I see that staying independent gives you leverage. They have to win you over.
You don't have a party at all, and you're better off.
Yeah. There's the strength in numbers argument, you know. So,
all right, well, we got to move on to our next caller.
Okay.
I'm done. I appreciate the conversation, though. You know,
I didn't have much
look
to
into
start
the
with.
Committee of Safety. You know, look at go into People's Duty on our website, highlight People's Duty, and you'll read all about committees of safety and that whole process that we're working on, which brings together the courts to take back control of our courts.
I've looked up the Virginia contacts and everything. So, anyway, don't forget to vote. Everybody, don't forget to vote.
Okay. All right, okay. Gerard, you want to take the mic over? Are you still with us here? Did you fall asleep on us? And by the way, has Brent come in yet? Did he make it today? Anyone seen Brent?
I did not see him tonight.
No. Okay. Gerard, are you ready to take the mic? Anybody? We'll take any questions and comments at this point. Anybody's got a question or comment on any subject matter, *6 and 1 to get into the queue. And, all right, I guess I'll continue on the mic until Gerard gets back. Let's take our next caller. Ross, you got the mic. Go right ahead, Ross.
Did you hear about the Biden went to that meeting in Glasgow?
Do I have what?
You heard of that meeting that was happening in Glasgow, Scotland?
In Glasgow? No, I didn't hear about that.
Yes.
What was going on?
It's about taking over financial assets and that by the financial elites.
Oh, no kidding. I didn't hear about
property.
That. Is that just something coming to the breaking news today?
They did it in some of it in the back scenes of the meeting before it has actually officially happened.
Yeah, I'm not aware of that, what's going on. Where did you hear about this?
Oh, because I was listening to YouTube and I eventually got that meeting about... Oh, Glenn Beck. You heard of Glenn Beck?
Glenn Beck?
Yes.
Yeah, I know Glenn Beck. Yep.
Yeah, he's the one who's talking about that stuff.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I have to look into it. I haven't listened to Glenn Beck in a while. I mean, he was really on the right track for a long time. I think he kind of took a little detour, especially during the Trump time, and then now he's back, I think, on the right track again. But I haven't listened to him in a while, but I'll check it out. All right, anything else, Ross?
Mm-hmm. You think if we set that committee of safety, we can get rid of that World Economic Forum?
Get rid of the economic what?
The World Economic Forum.
Oh, Economic Forum?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm not sure what exactly, that is. I mean, I know what an economic forum is, but who's holding that? Is that something that the elite hold?
Yes.
Okay.
The one who did in Davos.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Bilderbergs and things of that nature, I guess, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, look at all that's going to go away because I think all those people will be in jail because they're all part of the conspiracy to take over world power, you know, to get the New World Order going. And they're not going to be welcomed in any country. And, you know, they've been exposed for quite some time. And, you know, I think at some point they're all going down. So I don't see that too far away. Look at all of their assets must be taken away, and where does that have to go to? It's got to go back to the people. They robbed the people. They robbed us of our riches, of our heritage. We need to take it back, and so I see a big, huge economic boom for everybody coming. That's what I see.
Yes, I feel like also. The British royal family is also part of that problem, too.
Absolutely, yeah.
So they own the whole land of United Kingdom anyways.
Mm-hmm.
All that stuff will go back to them instead of the British people.
Well, the people must benefit from this, and the people of pretty much every country in the world needs to benefit from this. Of course, some more than others because of the bigger investment and the more that was stolen from them. These people have been destroying every square inch of this earth, ultimately, destroying it economically and environmentally, you know. They make this big thing about the environment, and yet they're the biggest destroyers of it all. They've destroyed our soil. We don't have the richness of our soils to give us the necessary, minerals, the trace minerals that come up out of our soil into our fruits and vegetables, particularly vegetables. They destroyed it all. They've ignored the... what God has laid out in the Bible, you know, you have to give the land rest every 7 years or 6 years, you have to give the land a rest. And then you have to swap the different things that you're growing and change things around a little bit. That's an economic stress for them. They don't like that because they want to make more money, and they've destroyed our soil that way. These big corporations.
I feel like this green global warming stuff is nonsense.
Well, of course, absolutely is. Yep.
Because how they make the money.
Well, absolutely. It's just another scam. So, you know, that's all they do is scam the people. So
I don't know. Because a lot of other countries who have monarchies like Norway or United Kingdom or Netherlands. All of it is owned by the royal families.
Mm-hmm.
The common people never owned it.
No. And that's pretty much true in every nation, and unfortunately even the United States. I mean, you know, they've enslaved us a long time ago. And, you know, the revolution has never really ended. We never really totally won the revolution. And it was picked up in World War I and World War II and every other war that has been fought ever since, ultimately, because the whole focus is to create chaos and destroy, ultimately, the United States. When the United States falls, the rest of the world goes.
Mm-hmm. I think the problem is they don't want the United States Revolution ever end because they don't want peace.
Right, and they don't want a liberated mindset. They don't want someone who believes in liberty and understands it under natural law. They don't want that because it's contrary to what they're doing. It's destructive to what they're doing because that's justice, and they're building injustice. So.
The point is, Satan is the one who's injustice.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and he wants to destroy that.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, you know, he's the prince in power of the air at the moment, but the day of judgment will come on that. I think we're seeing that. I think we'll be watching the beginnings of that judgment that's going to be coming upon that whole kingdom of Satan, so to speak. So.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Anything else, Ross?
Nope.
Okay. Thanks for the call. Okay, let's take our next caller. Gerard, are you there? Let's take our next caller. Someone from Florida, Pensacola, Florida. First name?
Hi there. Can you hear me?
We can hear you. What's your first name?
My name is Rachel.
How you doing?
I'm a new member. I hope I can remember what I'm getting ready to say here. I'm getting really tired. Worked a long shift today. But on your plan to fast-track this, I know you're talking mainly in New York.
Mm-hmm.
I used to work for a company called U.S. Law Shield, and I don't know if any of you have heard of them, but...
That sounds great. That's sort of like prepaid legal, Law Shield.
Yeah, yeah, and I still have it. You know, I carry it. I like the company. They're all about your constitutional rights for Second Amendment rights.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering if kind of thinking outside the box with other companies that don't exactly have the exact same mission but are constitutional driven, that maybe we can work with them to get a flyer in their packet. I've been to many of their classes because I was a territory manager for them.
Mm-hmm.
And there's probably other things out there that are just based around, certain things, maybe the tax, you know, and financial side of it, that they're working for that. And
well, as long as we'd be compatible, I mean, look at, we are a National Liberty Alliance, so we're looking to bring alliances for anybody who believes in liberty, different groups. We work with the Republic Review. We did connect with We the People, with Robert Schultz. In fact, we should make contact with Robert.
Yeah.
We haven't spoken with him in a while. And anything else, any other group that would be compatible to us, you know, we'd have to... If they're interested in working with us, we're interested in sitting down and listening and trying to understand who they are and what their main focus is. And as long as we'd be compatible at that level, then, of course, we can work together, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know how, you know, they have their own attorneys that write these books on these laws that they work with.
We intend getting rid of the Bar Association. But bear in mind, we do need lawyers, okay? And
exactly.
Lawyers,
I mean, they're all sleaze bags, but, they are good at what they do.
Where they belong, and they belong in their own field. They belong in equity. Mm-hmm. They don't belong in law. They can be counsel. They can give counsel to law for sure, because, you know, we are to have access to people who understand the law as far as the system and the structure of the law and the way things work, and to assist us in different ways. But we should be able to look at, children should be coming out of school with the ability to walk into any courtroom and deal with any problem that they have. Of course, that requires a child or a person at some point to be articulate on one end, and also the other side is to not be bold enough to step up on a stage type thing and talk. And any good school will teach children to do that. I know the private school I sent my son to, right off the bat, in kindergarten and first grade, right off the bat, they threw him right off onto a stage. He could speech here, this there,
start.
Get confidence. Yeah, right off the bat, when they're very young.
But for instance, that company... They do seminars and they need speakers, and what they do is they work their product into there. You looking for a place to have seminars, they will pay for it. I mean,
yeah, but we're not product motivated, and
but I mean, you're talking, say they'll have a seminar about caring and boat safety. You know, something like that. It's just, you're just a speaker, and then they just, do their thing at the end of it or whatever. But you get a,
talk. Leadership of this particular organization or corporation or whatever they are? And
I do know the, The main office is in Texas, and yeah, I do have, you know, I'm
I mean,
a
if they're interested
basis.
In talking with us and having, you know, some conversation to see if something could happen, that's one thing. But we'll never become, even though we support certain things and are supported by some products, we're very, very few, and we're very, very concerned with what kind of a product we might put out onto our page, and we only got a couple. We don't have that much anyway, and
really
nothing from it anyway. But you know, it was hopeful that we'd get some benefit from it. Every once in a while, a sale is made, and we get a few dollars, and every dollar counts.
Well, I mean, and if you and I didn't come on here thinking of that. I just it popped in my head when because I'm not associated with them anymore, except as a member, you know. But
well, again, we'd have to understand who they are, what who they are from the foundational level, and whether it's compatible, and how we can benefit each other, particularly benefit us and the people, which because that's what our focus is on, is the people.
Yeah.
But with
of
or without course. Those kind of groups or situations, we will go forward and succeed, and we have to.
Yeah.
We have no choice.
Yeah, I just thought it might be a way to get your mission out there a little quicker and get
You know, the thing is this. I remember when I first saw about the committee man. The committee man was really, really an interesting thing. We ran with it for a few years, and we continued to run with it even up till recently with the idea. But then, you know, we had an epiphany in realizing that really the committee man was a captive committee of safety is exactly what it was. They captured them and codified them and put them under the control and into party bosses, and they've lost all their real power and push. But, you know, we have to get this back up and going again, and only the people can do it. But when I remember when I was listening, for instance, on the committee man, and I saw the presentation with a PowerPoint, and I realized I could do that, and I connected with the individual who was doing a PowerPoint, and I duplicated what he was doing, and then other people followed, came off of me, and then off of them, and people were out moving around bringing the program. And that's exactly what we need to do here. You know, once we get the seminar going and we get all the recordings and all of the tools necessary to bring it forward, PowerPoints, and then people see that, and then they can pick it up and do it, the same thing in their counties. And if they want, they can travel their state. Some people can get really involved in trying to organize their entire state, like I'm going to try to do, and move things along, you know. So
places like, I don't know if New York has Gander Outdoors, some of those places, big outdoor places have conference rooms that people don't know, and they're free to use. You just have to book it in advance. So that's another way to maybe.
We're looking around. I know, you know, we were doing, we've used town halls, okay. In the beginning we did, until they realized what we were doing, and then we started traveling to other places. They stopped letting us in.
Well, a place like a large outdoor sporting good place is that on a weekend, a Saturday, you know, you have tons of foot traffic that, you know, somebody can also hand out flyers if they're not there for that, and kind of spread the word in any
Well, a lot of also libraries are very good. Matter of fact, that's what I'm going to start looking at tomorrow. Is calling around to some local libraries.
No one goes to libraries.
Huh?
Just kidding. I said nobody goes to libraries. But
libraries have rooms that they'll allow you to come in and do a conference. We've done it many times up in Albany, particularly, and in various other places. You know, other people would set place up, and we'd travel out there to give the presentation of whatever the program is that we're going to present. And in this case, of course, it's the Committee of Safety. So we'll find places. excuse me. I remember when we used to do the hotel rooms, not the hotel rooms, but the hotel conferences in hotels. You know, we'd pay $100, $100 and a quarter, $150. I'm calling around now, and they want like $450 and more. And so it's getting a little more richer than what it was. So I'm going to be looking more towards the freebie places, like libraries particularly. So that's what I'll do.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, that's all I had to say. I was just thinking outside the box and thinking, you know, if there was a flyer that said, kind of condensed all this to, which there may be on the website, I would go.
Well, we do have flyers up there, and we have a couple of flyers that we'll put out. We'll be putting up there also. We'll be passing out at the seminars, and we'll make it part of the toolbox for people because, you know, we have a short video. It's a PowerPoint video. It's a very short one. I think it's 25 minutes long, and it's an introduction to the Committees of Safety as far as our Founding Fathers were concerned, how they came about, what they are, how our Founding Fathers used it, and how they used it to create the nation, and how they morphed into the Committeemen, which really, you know, actually they were drafted into the Committeemen. The name was, you see, well, they are Committeemen. You know, they're part of a committee, Committee of Safety, you know. You got the Committee of Correspondence, the Committee of Education, the Committee for the Militia, and so on, the Judicial Committee, you know, and all these. So they're committeemen, you know. And so that was kind of robbed, and they codified the system and took it away from the people and made it political and gave them party bosses and control the whole process, and nothing is done. Except to produce criminals within offices to run our nation.
I'll definitely watch that. And maybe some people listening, maybe it struck an idea on them that they can, share a better idea with you, but on how to do all that. But does this meeting thing we're using, does it not have chat, like where you can type a message or?
Well, yeah, I think that it does have, I'm not sure whether it does or not. We just don't use it because we want people to stay focused in on the subject matter at hand that we're discussing. We want to try to change. What happens is once people get into the text, then they're off on other subjects. And I don't see it as a benefit. I know some people do, but I don't. I mean, I don't even have a smartphone, and I refuse to buy one. I mean, I can get a little text on it, but my phone, but I have no interest in it because it just takes away, it robs you of time for me. I mean, I get robbed enough of time, just a little bit of text ability that I've got. I don't have the time. You know, I'm too busy doing the things that need to be done. But in any event, you know, it sort of takes away from the conversation, I think. And so we've never opened it up. If we have it, and we just never executed it.
Okay.
But anyway, thanks for the call. And we'll take the next caller.
Thank you.
Thank you. Gerard, if you're here, let me know. All right, let us take Amy. You got the mic. Go right ahead, Amy.
Hello.
Hello, Amy.
Oh, hi. Sorry to hear about Gerard's sister, his story reminded me of an amazing Polly. I don't know if you've ever seen her video.
Oh, she's great. She's amazing. Yeah, I watch her often, all the time, always checking in on her.
Yeah, so she did extensive research on, like, sounded like a management consulting plan that they unveiled on all these hospitals before they set them up to kill people, to basically make them killing machines. But she did all the research, and it's basically like a management consulting project. But it's worth looking to if, you know.
Is that a recent one? Because I don't recall that particular one. Is that a recent one, though?
I don't know. I'd have to go back and hunt for it on her, you know, like, archive. But it was excellent, you know.
I'm looking at it right now. Are you coming in on computer or phone? How are you coming in on us?
I'm on the phone, yeah.
Oh, okay. All right, yeah. Well, are you on a smartphone?
I'm in front of a computer. I could.
Okay, because if you can see, you know, we're sharing the screen right now, and I'm sharing Amazing Polly right now, and I know the last thing she had put up was Meta is Facebook creating. Is Facebook creating a soul trap? You know, anybody who hasn't heard of Amazing Polly, you need to hear about Amazing Polly. She is really amazing. She does some really great in-depth studies on all kinds of things, and really very revealing, you know, experiments in good and evil, you know, World Economic Forum, vaccine exemption, hijackers exposed, hospital insiders reveal soulless COVID protocols. Maybe that's the one you may be talking about.
Yeah, maybe that's it. Yeah.
And she does some really great research. This woman is amazing. She's a very good researcher and brings things together. She spends a lot of time researching. I'll tell you that. Puts a lot of hours into the work to get what she gets out. And I know she revealed a lot of stuff with the Nazis and how they've infiltrated into our nation and how a lot of these families are still benefiting economically from the whole process and how they're still part of the New World Order, destructive to the way of life, not only here but around the world.
It could be the one entitled "How Hospitals Are Killing Us." I'm not sure.
Yeah, that's right underneath that. Yeah, yeah.
It could be. But she's, you know, you might be able to find it on there. But if Dredd's going to sue them, she did a lot of research up front, you know, that he could maybe
A good point. Yes, I'll let him know. I don't know if he's listening in right now, but I'll let him know about that on Amazing Polly. Yeah, it is two of them that he probably needs to look at, you know.
But part of that's probably why it took him a week to get in touch with somebody over the phone, because of the way they set this up.
He got his education from that, though, you know, and unfortunately he lost his sister in that, too.
And then as far as the ivermectin, I found a good source, you know, because I found in the U.S., even if you get a script, they're a little stingy with it, but there's a website called buyivermectin.us, and the guy's in India, but a lot of his payment methods have been shut down. But if you email him, you can pay him on like Coinbase and like Bitcoins, and then he mailed it, so you could get like 250 ivermectins or something for pretty cheap, you know, and you don't need a script.
Well, what are they, pills, or are they, what kind of form are they? Do they pill
form? He's got the ivermectin, the hydroxychloroquine, he's got the azithromycin. Like,
right, what was the contact information again?
Buyivermectin.us.
Right.
So we tried a bunch of payment methods that didn't work and ended up with the Bitcoin. And it takes a while to come because it's shipped from India.
He doesn't do checks or money orders or credit cards or anything like that?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, if you mail it to him, he's
overseas. I'll check that out. That sounds interesting because I would like to be prepared in case of a situation comes up where we need it. And I understand a lot of this stuff cures the common flu also. So, I mean, hey, it could be used
They're overcharging people for the ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine in the U.S., I found, more so with the ivermectin. And they're not giving you enough. Like, if you look at Dr. Bean's videos, the amount that you need, it's by your weight. The doctors really don't give you enough for the Dr. Bean protocol. But and they overcharge for it, so I found that this guy had a really good price and quantity.
All right, well, I'll add that to our research and looking this up with what Gerard does and puts together, and we'll create a page for this, and people will have access to the protocol information and also access to these, I don't want to call them pharmaceuticals, but I guess they are, so...
Yeah, the it's true that the person before said it's the hydroxychloroquine. You can actually make it. It's basically like grapefruit rinds boiled down. There's a way to make it, but looks a little messy. So yeah.
Okay. All right. Anything else?
That was it. Yep.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Mimi. Appreciate
your
call.
Yep.
Okay, we'll take our next caller, Sam. It looks like maybe from Kentucky. And anybody else wants to get into the queue, *6 and 1? We have about 25 minutes left, so we can take more questions. Sam, go ahead.
Hello.
How you doing?
You got it?
We got you.
All right. Well, she talked about hydroxychloroquine and you can do the rind of a grapefruit. And a friend of mine sent it to me, and we made it. And a rind of a lemon, and just cover it with water, simmer it. But you have to, they say you have to keep a tight lid on it, never lift that lid for 2 hours. You simmer it, and it so that the
would you do it in a pressure cooker or just in a pot with a cap?
We did it in a pot in a heavy duty stainless steel pot. And we did several, but you can do as many as you want. Just cover it with water.
And
then
you have this recipe?
How's that?
You can get us this recipe?
Yeah, I mean, that's the recipe, what I just said, what the guy sent me, and I like it. It's been effective. But then you just simmer it for 2 hours. Never lift the lid, because that's where the good stuff gets away when the steam gets out of there. You just keep the lid on it. Don't boil it really, but just simmer it. Then take it off after 2 hours and just let it sit for as long as it takes to get it to room temperature.
Mm-hmm.
Then squeeze the rind and I just put it. They put it in mason jars. The thing that I did different about all that was I had about 3 pounds of each of that fruit. I took the rind off of 3 pounds of each. And then I put a little over a pound of garlic in there. I took the outside, the fine paper shell off, but I didn't peel the individual clove. And just that's what I added that to it. It'll add to it, I believe. So we like it.
Okay, that's good information. I don't know if you want to send us a written copy of the instructions.
I could by mail, but I don't have email.
You don't have email. Okay, well, you can send it to mail then if you want. I'll give you our address.
Okay, just a second. Let me write this down. I'm going to get everything. Make sure I got a pen that writes here. Yes, go ahead.
Okay, either that or you can fax it. Do you have a fax machine?
I don't.
Okay. All right, well, you can send it to NLA, National Liberty Alliance. You can either write it out at NLA, National Liberty Alliance.
NLA, yeah.
Okay, and the address is 3979 Albany. Okay. Post Road.
Albany Post
Road.
Yep.
Hyde Park, New York. That's Hyde, two words, P-A-R-K. Hyde, P-A-R-K, Hyde Park, NY, New York, 12538. Yep. And it's Suite 107.
Suite what?
107.
One, two, five.
38. 38.
Now, I have people, though, that do, like, they might take a picture of something and run it through their smartphone. I have somebody that can do that, and they come here frequently to do stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I could do something like that.
So, you know...
It would be like an email. It's an email.
Yeah, maybe you can ask them to email it. You know?
Yeah, they would. Yeah, give me your email address.
Best email, get it to mail, M-A-I-L. And this way a lot of people here will get it. The leadership in L.A. will get it. Everyone will get it. Mail, M-A-I-L, at nationallibertyalliance.org.
At national, and I spell all that out, right?
Yeah, national, N-A-T-I-O-N-A-L. Liberty, L-I-B-E-R-T-Y, Alliance, A-L-L-I-A-N-C-E, .org. All one word.
No A-L-L-I-A-N-C-E, right?
Correct.
.org, okay. Okay, I'll see which way I can get this done, and I'll, yeah, we can do that.
Anything else? Any question? Any other comments?
That's it, pretty much. I'm sorry to hear about Gerard's... sister there, but But anyway, yeah, that's it for me. Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right, again, if anybody wants to get into the queue, star 6 and a 1, got one person left in the queue. We'll take that person. Ross, you got the mic again. Welcome back, Ross.
You can see me. You would send people email when you would have that conference on the community safety.
When that conference is set up, we will be sending out emails immediately and give people as much time as we can. Like if I can book a room this week somewhere, you know, a library or a hotel or someplace, as soon as I get it booked, I will then start sending emails out, and we'll book it for probably 3 to 4 weeks away. So it'll be on a Saturday at noontime, probably noon to 3. We'll probably end up longer than that, but the conference will go, you know, this is, well, I guess we can call it a conference, whatever we want to call it, but it'll go 3 hours at least, but we'll probably go longer than that.
Because be out my time, it would be 8 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
Or 9.
Oh, yeah, you're on the West Coast, huh?
Yes.
Yeah, and we will be sending it out live as long as we can set it up. I don't see why we can't set up at least to be able to go live over the internet. You know, through this room here, right here. People will be able to come here to this room, so it'll come through here. And depending if we get enough people to help us with this, you know, we'll set up cameras and we'll try to get it out on BitChute and YouTube and any other platform we can. I don't know. But, again, we need people who will help assist with that. I do have someone that's looking into it and might be able to set a lot of this up. But we need help. So anybody here in New York that wants to help set this thing up with us, we'd appreciate it. And, again, you know, we'll be duplicating this, going other places throughout New York. And eventually, hopefully, we'll go into Connecticut and Jersey, maybe. Okay.
Okay.
Anything else, Ross?
See, my mom and my parents are refusing to organize the community safety because they think I'm not capable of doing it.
Mm-hmm. Well, get people in the neighborhood connected to work with you to do it. I mean, it doesn't take, you know, one person can't do it all. And Committee of Safety requires, you know, lots of people to get involved locally and pick up different, you know, become part of a different, numerous committees to be created within the Committee of Safety. And people need to get connected with the committee and do work to benefit, you know, our agenda, which is to save the Republic. And again,
yeah.
We're not looking for people to spend a lot of time at this. You know, people have to work and their families and they have a life. Of course, we understand that. But everybody should give back and participate in government by consent. And the only way you could do this is through committees of safety. And so you come together once a month and for 2 hours maybe. And throughout the rest of that month, you know, you might have a job to do on your committee, maybe a couple hours of work throughout the month. And there's numerous people on a committee, so everybody's doing a couple hours. When you come back, you should have a lot of work done to report to the main committee of safety, you know. You know, we need, again, to move in our schools to get a proper education and make sure our children are being taught proper civics and the Constitution and common law and what their heritage is. They can use a lot of our materials, and I'm hoping to find some time and work with Brent and write some books for, you know, for curriculum in school. So,
yes.
You know, there are a lot of books already out there that we can work with to try to create, we'd have to get permission from them. For instance, what is that organization? Goodness, what is that?
You mean Constitutional Center?
Yes, there you go. What is the name? The Constitutional Center. What's the rest of it? Do you know it all?
National Constitutional Center.
National Constitutional Center. There's another
National word. Center for Constitutional Studies.
Okay, so what's the acronym for that?
NCCS.
Okay, and so I think it's NCCS.net, I think, or maybe com. But that place there, they have these great books. You know, they have the 5,000-Year Leap. They have the real Thomas Jefferson, the real George Washington. They have the Making of America. I mean, they got some great, great books. I've got all of those books and more. And those books are already in such a form that you can create a textbook out of that. So I'd like to approach those people and talk with them about creating, whether they do it or if they allow us to do it, to take those books to create, to make textbooks to put into schools. And there is the perfect curriculum. You know, I'd like to write a book, for the higher level, you know, maybe in 9th or 10th grade, 8th or 9th. I don't think schools are necessary to go beyond 9th grade as far as your basic, schooling is required, because children can achieve a much better, they can achieve a college-level education within 9 years if they really were taught properly.
Even 8 years, too.
Yeah, even eight. But I've just taken 9 years as a number, and so in 9 years they should be able to have a basic college education, and even a better college education than what we're given to our children. But and then, of course, you know, if you want to become a doctor or whatever, of course, then you have a further education inside that. But I'd like to write a book for maybe the 8th or 9th grade level and a textbook. But there are a lot of great books already out there.
How do we get back the law scores away from the Bar Association?
How do we get, I'm sorry, how do we what?
To get back the law scores.
Oh, that's a pretty simple one, by the way. And I'm working on I've already put some things together. I just got to put a whole paper together is what I need to do. It's very simple. They're guilty of subversion because they teach subversion against our Constitution, subversion against our heritage, against our republic. They teach lawyers, the Bar Association, bar schools teach lawyers that the common law has been abrogated. That's a crime. That is a crime. Punishable up to 20 years in prison. Could be anywhere from 5 to 20. Okay? And so anybody who puts out material or teaches or organizes or creates a society, I'm going to pull those U.S. codes up and we'll read them maybe next week. But anybody who does those things and teaches the subversion is guilty of subversion and is punished and can be punished. And there's certain penalties already written up that legislators have already written up, and it's codified already. And clearly, the Bar Association, they've destroyed our courts. They brought all kinds of problems into our system. They created a whole system of civil law. They changed our common law into civil law. They changed our rules. They've got the rules of the court. They've gotten rid of the rules of common law. They've gotten rid of maxims. They've destroyed our right of due process. They've combined equity with law, and they call it civil law. So equity courts, true equity courts, really are not there anymore. Of course, courts of law have been gone for a long time now. There are no courts of law. The bar is an easy one to shut down once we get onto the other side. We just have to go after these people. And I would go. I'd go after the leadership criminally. That's what I would do. But we'll see.
I think the court of law is not really gone. It's just hidden from us.
Oh, right, exactly. There are, I forget the number, let me think about this. I'm trying to think if I did this already online or not the bar. We're going to have to do a Monday program with the bar and and their subversion. And, you know, there's a couple of hundred schools out there that are non-bar, and a lot of states won't allow them to practice law. But there's quite a few schools that are bar schools, and all of these bar schools are anti-constitutional. You know, so
yeah, I think also we have the law schools. The roots of that is all the way to the Roman canon law. That's the Catholic Church.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all of that goes all the way back to Babylon. Civil law stems from Babylon, and you know, and it has different names too. It had Roman law, which brings you into the church and into Rome too. You know, Roman law. You got Justinian. It's just different names for the same thing, same package. So it's all the same. All right. I see we got a couple more people in the queue, Ross. Okay. Any final thing? Okay. Because we've only got about 8 minutes.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks a lot,
you
Ross.
Can.
Thank you. And yeah, I think you're very well capable of organizing and working with other people. But remember, we need lots of skills. So
yeah. Why am I parents think I can't do it?
Well, I don't know. I don't know. That's something you'll have to discuss with them. And I think you're very well capable of working with other people to organize this. And, you know, again, we all need assistance because we all have different skills and different abilities. And so, you know, many hands make light work. And one person knows this and the other person knows that and the other person knows this. You bring it all together and you got something going, you know.
Some people have very good strengths of being organized, and some have better skills of communications, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm. Well, look, I've been listening to you for quite some time now. You've been on the mic up here asking questions and coming up with thoughts and ideas. And, you know, sometimes I have a little bit of a hard time understanding your words, but you come up with good stuff, and I think you can be, you know, benefit the movement. So, but work with people, you know.
Because I always think of stuff. That's why.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's
I ponder good. On it a lot. Yeah.
Well, that's what we got to do: ponder on a lot of stuff, especially this stuff. We need to meditate on it. So, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
My mind, the wheels of my mind are constantly turning on these things, you know, and it's satisfactory, you know. It's good thoughts, you know. Whatsoever things are good, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are, you know, I forget what the way that verse goes. There's a lot more to that, but think on these things, the good things. So,
okay.
Thanks a lot, Ross. Okay, let's take our next caller. Bye. We've got about 6 more minutes. So, Jim from PA, you got the mic. Go right ahead.
Yeah, John, this is Jim, PA.
Let me just make an announcement here real quick before I forget. I saw California Fred was on, and just want to let you know, Fred, I haven't sent that second package out yet. I will do that. I apologize. It's sitting on my desk. It's just a note, but, you know, I've got to get that done. So I'll be working on that, and I'll get it out to you. I'll give you an update on that next Monday. Okay, we'll go back to you, Jim.
Okay, I have here, and I've inquired to NOA about the text, the history of American constitutional or common law with commentary concerning equity and merchant law by Pond, Fisher, Knudsen, and the North American Freedom Council. And I believe you are not familiar with it, and I'd like to forward a copy of to you.
Well,
NOA.
Yeah, I'll take a look at it, absolutely. Is it a large body of work, or... You know,
so it looks like
how many pages?
Paperback, you know, what, 125 pages.
Oh, okay, that's not bad reading then. You know, that's not too bad. All right, yeah, if you want to forward me a copy, I'd appreciate it. Would it be electronic? Or
I would like to start what your feedback is. And one last thing, Brent's Thursday sheriff call, would you know if there's a fee to participate in that call?
Yes, there is. You'd have to talk to Francine about that, and you can get Francine at francine@nationallibertyalliance.org and ask her about the details of that. So.
Okay, I just wanted to find out. Okay, that's all I have. I'll talk to you again.
Okay.
Good night.
Appreciate it. Thank you, Jim. Okay, Marge from North Carolina, you got the mic. Go right ahead. And
hey,
you'll be our last caller. We got 4 minutes left, and we'll give them 4 minutes to you. So it's Margie,
all
right?
Yes, Margie, uh-huh.
Okay, yep.
How you doing, John?
Good, thank you.
Yes, I have a question for you, but it's about state taxes. But, you know, all this
unlawful.
Is going to go...
Unlawful.
Yeah, yeah. All of it's going to go away. But what they did to me, the idiots, and I'm North Carolina, so we have the Department of Revenue. They self-assessed me for 2017 and 2018. And no, I didn't. I did not voluntarily. I did not voluntarily. I didn't pay. I didn't pay the, you know, the state, the federal taxes. So the federal... And state, they say that they're not, they say that they're separate.
Mm-hmm.
But they assess your gross income on the on your federal tax.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, there's a collaboration between them, and I'm not sure exactly how it works, but it appears like the feds are really collecting everything, then disperse it back out. And remember, you know, the states have no
they can't assess
it,
right?
Huh?
They can't assess my tax.
I had a battle in New York with those people, and then I put them on my ignore, and they just went away. I found out they were kind of paper tigers. Now, I don't want to say that they absolutely are, but my perception is that they are because they don't have the enforcement that the IRS has. That's the key there. And they can't really take it into the courts. I mean, the courts are corrupt enough, maybe they can now, but basically, they don't have a foot to foot to stand on. They take it into the courts because it's a direct tax. You can make an argument and beat them in a court of law. They will take you into administrative courts, and that's what they tried to do to me, and I told them to go to Hades, and I never participated. I did once with those people on the unemployment, which I didn't participate with, and they were coming out after me. They want all kinds of money, and I didn't know enough really to realize I'd need to stay out of their administrative courts. They have no authority. They have no arm to bring me in. And I have no contract signed with them, so there's nothing they can do. But I was ignorant back then, and I did go to their silly courts. And then the state tried to do something with that, and then I just ignored them altogether. I was going to sue them. I never got around to it in the Supreme Court. But the same thing with the state tax. They don't have a real good way of really collection like the IRS has.
This is what they can do. You know, see, on the 2017 tax, what I made, my gross income, and then they say, you know, with the darn fees and interest and all this crap,
yep.
They say it's $1,229.09. And then 2018 was $700.702.23. Well, and I didn't even pay taxes. You know, it's a voluntary compliance system. I don't, you know.
Exactly.
So they just self-assess me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do what they want, and I don't know how all these other states work, but you know,
what I'm
it's all the same
of,
thing.
They can go to. Cause see, I work for somebody, so I'm a security officer.
Mm-hmm.
They can maybe. All they can get is 10%, garnish my wages, you know. They can only take 10% out of that, or garnish the wage, you know. But I didn't even...
Yeah, I've been self-employed for many, many years, so, you know, they really... They an extra problem with me, and they have to come with liens and stuff to deal with me, and by the time they came around with that, I had learned some tricks about liens and their process and how to deal with that by getting them into court before they get you. Because they have to notify you, by the way. It's the law that they, and they do follow that procedure. They give you a notice that in 7 days we're going to place a lien on you. Okay, well then, you know, what I did is I went and I sued the sheriff, I sued the county clerk, I sued the federal agents, and I sued the commissioner of the IRS. And this was an IRS thing, so. And that froze everyone from doing anything. They couldn't come seize my assets. They couldn't go and get into my bank accounts or anything. And so I got them in court before they got me into court. And I did that three times over the years. And I was able to cut them off at the pass, so to speak. But now the IRS has a little thing. I don't know how they've been working, how long they've been working on this, but they tried to utilize it on me. They have another company that the IRS hires out as a collection agency, and they set you up to destroy your credit and so on and so forth. And I ended up suing them too, you know. So again, you know, you have to get them into court before they get you into court, because they'll try to bring you in criminally, you know, to begin with.
But I might just sit on it. I might not do any, or I could appeal it or something, or say, you know, you read the back part of it. It says you can appeal it or whatever before, you know, 45 days.
Let me tell you something. What you should do is you should respond to them in a notice and demand. And some of your demand is they got to explain themselves by what authority and so on and so forth. Where's the law?
Send that to them, a notice and demand.
A notice and demand. And look, I've learned with taxes and stuff and anything government, if they're assaulting you through paper terrorism, okay, because that's what they're good at. They call us paper terrorists, but they're paper terrorists. And
yeah.
Every time they send me anything, I respond point by point. They never answer. All I'm doing is building a court case. That's what you do when you're responding, and you defeat everything that they got on that paper. You counteract it, you know. And then you get to a point, and you give them a notice and demand, cease and desist, or this or that, and, you know, approve.
I just want to do something simple then, John, just to be...
Yeah, well, just do a notice and demand and require them to explain themselves. And we have a notice and demand layout for, you know, the framework for notice and demand up on our website. So you can get all that information there.
And just do that then, maybe, you know, for the 2017 and the 2018.
And bear in mind, in the next months or a year or so, this is all going to be gone anyway, because it's all unlawful. And once we get back and reset back to the Constitution, then these things can't be applied upon it, we the people.
That's correct. And it's going to happen soon. And we don't even have, I mean, the IRS is bankrupt. They're gone. You know, Trump's in control of that. Mm-hmm. You know, the Treasury.
Well, you know, the IRS only surfaced, the IRS only really surfaced in 1971, although they were unlawfully doing all kinds of things, and the Federal Reserve was created way back when, 1913, I think it was. But the IRS actually became an agency. They just appeared as an agency in 1971. They were operating in the background before that. I don't know if you heard of the Cooper files. I think we have a copy of the Cooper file up on our website. And basically it spoke about how they just brought themselves into creation. There is an agency for the IRS, and they sit among other agencies, and yet there is no legislative authority for that, and there's no legislation at all that created the IRS. It doesn't exist. They have USC 26. It's been around for quite some time, a lot longer than the IRS was, but the IRS becoming the arm of the really the Federal Reserve.
It's all fraud, and we're not, you know, that's going to be gone soon. We're not, the Federal Reserve Bank's gone, the IRS,
all going away.
Pay taxes. Yeah, it's all going away soon.
Mm-hmm.
But I wonder how it's going to work with state taxes. You know, can we stop paying this?
Absolutely, because it's a direct tax. It's the same thing. The U.S. Constitution makes it clear that
North Carolina won't have to... You're New York, too. So.
Yeah, no state, because look at anything that's repugnant to the Constitution is null and void. Even your state constitution, anything in that state constitution to the contrary, okay, to the Constitution, okay, is null and void, because it's the supreme law of the land. And an article, Let's see, Article 1, Section 9, Clause 4, we're looking at today, no direct tax. It's unlawful. They're not allowed to do it, and that's a direct tax. A direct tax is directly upon the person or upon the property of the person. You can't tax them.
And they make plenty of money. Well, you know, go into the CAFR account, each little county. Let's go into the CAFR account, you know.
Well, again, you know, the amounts of money involved out there is in the trillions, okay? And that's all going to go back to the people on the other side. And that's why this economy is going to flourish like it never flourished before. I mean, we're going to see such an economic boom once this whole thing is done with. It's just going to be unimaginable.
Which is very, very soon. And
yes, very soon.
I'll do a... would you call that again? A notice in demand?
Notice in demand, yep.
Do I have to have it go and have it notarized and everything?
Oh, yeah. You want to be very careful with a notice in demand. Follow the instructions very, very carefully. And you serve it as a paper. You can use the U.S. mail to make a serving of the paper by certified mail, return, reslip, you know, with the signature on it, the green card. So you get that is really proof of service. And I would even go as far as having someone else drop it in the mail, get the return slip and everything, you know, or do all that for you in the mail and then do an affidavit of service. I would go that far. I do anyway, whenever I do a notice in demand. And there are 8 steps to a notice in demand, or 8 points, shall I say. You got to cover each one of those 8 points. It's very, very important. There's complete instructions on how to do that up on our website under the Education tab, I believe it is.
Okay, but can I just do a certified mail instead of that second step that you're talking about?
Well, you could, but it's much more powerful to go the other route because, first of all, it's more lawful. Second of all, you can execute it in a court of law if you can find one. Right, but you can execute it in a show cause and why a summary judgment shouldn't be taken against you because they've already failed by not responding to you because you've laying it out just like a court system would lay out. You know, the only difference is in a court, you know, you get an index number and it gets recorded and filed with the clerk. Now you can take that notice and demand and file it with the clerk also. Okay, it's sitting in there.
Oh.
Just file it with the clerk in the county. And now you've done everything legal, huh?
Take it down there?
Take it right down and tell them you want to file it.
Notice
in demand.
Demand.
And against whoever it is, you know, the agency, so on and so forth, and you file it with the county clerk. And that's no different. And it's sort of an index number you get anyway, but the index number that they usually use for the court... Okay, well, what's the difference? It's still the same thing. So once they default on you, they have a duty to default, okay? And on the top, you want to put the big word, notice, and demand, okay? And I would do it in 2 lines. The word notice, big caps, and underneath it is part of the title, you know, maybe a 20 font or 12 or an 18 font, something big, 20 font, 24 font maybe even. But you do notice, all caps. Right underneath it, and demand, and then skip a line or two, then start the process and lay it out exactly the way it's shown in the paperwork that we've put up there on our website.
And then just...
And, you know, look, go through it. Go through it and figure out everything. Come back next Monday and quiz us on things you don't know or understand, and we'll talk some more about it. Go get familiar with it, and let's talk next Monday.
I don't mind going down there. I like the courthouse. I don't mind going down there, Mecklenburg County.
Well, look, you want to go to the clerk, county clerk, not the courthouse.
Yes.
And that's where you file anyway. You file it with the county clerk.
Clerk of courts, right, John? Clerk of courts?
Well, no, just the county clerk. You're not going to file a court case at this point in time, but the legality, the legal side of this whole thing, by serving it the way I told you to do it, making sure you the big words, notice and demand, that means it's important for them to understand, you know, and in the very beginning, you give them the phrase, you lay out the words that they have 30 days to respond, so on and so forth, and if you don't, then a summary judgment will be taken against you. I forget exactly how it's worded. I don't think it uses the word summary judgment, but something similar to that. and we'll apply and decide for you what needs to be done, and the wherefore clause is inside there. The whole thing is really well put together, you know. We learned that from another individual, Bill Thornton. We used his paperwork, and we've kind of enhanced it, and we think we made it better. But it's basically the same layout, and eight points must be made. And it's a legal document. So the thing is when they're going to ignore it because they think their system is the only system to begin with, because they'll talk to a lawyer when they see something like this, and once it comes in served as a certified mail and says notice and demand, 30 days to respond, the bar attorneys will look at it and say, don't worry about it, it's nothing. But it is everything. It is everything. It's no different than any other paper that you serve on some authority challenging what they're doing.
It says detached, and then the North Carolina Department of Revenue, that's our capital, Raleigh, North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
All right, well, I got to go. It's 12 after.
But, I mean, did
you got a lot more than 4 minutes. Huh?
Yeah, I know. Did
what was that?
File it in the...
file it down with the county clerk. Tell them you want to file a notice of demand, the county clerk.
What is that, the county clerk? Well, there's criminal and there's...
No, the county clerk. The county clerk is elected. It's an elected individual and serves, and they deal with all of the county business, recordings and everything, and they're responsible for the courts and filing the papers for the courts. It's the same place where you would go to file papers in a court anyway for the Supreme Court, you know, the state Supreme Court. We call it the state Supreme Court. Some states call it something else, but the state court or something, I don't know.
County clerk, I mean.
Yeah, county clerk. There's one county clerk that's an elected position. They have a duty and a responsibility to receive all paperwork and to file it and record it. That's their job.
That's not the same as the clerk of court.
No,
criminal or civil room.
No, totally different. That's another clerk in the courthouse themselves. But bear in mind, when you file a case in the court, you don't go down to the courthouse. You go to the county clerk and file it, and they ship it up to the courthouse. They make the record and put it through. You get what's called an index number. The index number has to come from the county clerk. Okay? So they handle all that, and they give you an index. Here in New York, they have it broken up with an index number and RJI, which is a request for judicial intervention, okay? And so I think it's $210 for the index number and $105 for the RJI. I never file an RJI, just to file an index number and put all the papers, serve the papers, and they do take that very serious once they know it's filed with an index number. But if it's not done with a court index number, the lawyer that they'll probably talk to will say, don't worry, it's nothing. And that being the case, they default. Then you can file a default for a default judgment to show cause why a default shouldn't be taken against you. You fail to respond.
And then where would I send that?
That you would file with that's what you would file in the court, okay? And then if they default that, then you just go with an affidavit of default and you make your collection on whatever your wherefore clause was. Okay, whatever it is that you're expecting that they should pay for damages to you. And anyway, that's just another way of doing it. I always do notice of demands, and then all my paperwork that I do with corresponding to any government agency is notarized and sent in certified mail, but the first notice and demand that you do to them, you know, letters are one thing, you could just notarize it, but a notice and demand, you want to, I think you really want to get someone to serve it for you, which means just take someone to go down and put in the post office and say, and write an affidavit of service, which you find on the same area on the website, an affidavit of service just stating the fact that they took this paper, addressed
to
this
them.
Individual, and these are the things that were inside of it, and I put it into an envelope, and I stuck it in the mail, and then you get the return address, return receipt with the signature on it. It's a green card.
Okay.
But go through it and get familiar with it. Come back and ask questions maybe next week or the week after, whenever you want.
Okay. Okay. Right? And then we're not going to have, bar attorneys are going to be gone. When we go back to constitutional law, the judges and the lawyers, the bar attorneys, they're not going to be anymore because they're going to have to get re-educated. And
well,
when they get re-educated,
there's a lot that they are.
We won't have any.
Well, there is a lot that they are educated in that they can use from their education. You know, a court process, a lot of it would remain the same to some degree, okay? The rules go out the door because we've got to go back to the rules of common law, so that is part of the things that they'll have to learn about and maxims and how all that works. They have to get rid of all civil law. Huh?
Yeah, they'll get re-educated, but there will never be any more bar attorneys. Once we go
right,
back
we don't want right exactly. Look at the bar was created. Was created in the colonies in 1750. The first British bar was created in the British colonies in 1750 for the sole purpose to destroy common law in the colonies, and it was in response to Benjamin Franklin, who in 1929 started his newspaper in Philadelphia, and he became a thorn in the side of the king. And he started this whole business of rebellion with all the problems. So, did I say 1929? Oh, I'm sorry, 1729. He's not that old. So 1729, yeah, and 1750 is when the bar was created, and they were having problems prosecuting the people that were rebellion against the king. They were so far away because they couldn't get a conviction, and the juries refused to indict, refused to find them guilty. You know. Anyway, that was the beginning of things, so to speak. All right.
We'll have them. But if they don't want to go to constitutional law and get reeducated, then they're not going to have a job. Is what I'm saying.
But they do have a certain amount of education that's still valid. You know, basically, you know, statutes, the equity, okay, there are 57 codes. And now most lawyers don't get involved in the codes on the federal level, okay? And then there are codes also on the state level. And I don't know, I never really looked too deeply into that. It's all irrelevant to me anyway because they don't apply to the people. But on the federal level, there are 57 codes. And you have lawyers that have studied these codes, and those codes are lawful in most cases. There are some repugnant statutes in some of these codes, and certain codes like USC 26, of course, is totally repugnant and unlawful and unconstitutional, so that just got to go altogether. But you look at, you go in, I think it's USC 3 deals with I think that one deals with the president. You know, there's a code, there's a series of codes that deal with Congress that they have to operate underneath, a series of code that deals with the judiciary, one that deals with the president, one that deals with different federal agencies, the Justice Department. I mean, every one of
that's
these
right,
things.
That's right. You
that's
think,
called
so what
equity.
You're saying is, yeah, oh, that's called equity. So you,
yes.
You think we will still, is what I hear you say, will we still have that?
Absolutely. That's part of our
constitutional law.
That's part of our system. That's all constitutional law. But there things like things like USC 18 and USC 28, I think it is. But you have the penal code, which is criminal. Okay, I mean all of that's got to go. I mean all the sections of that again has got to go because they have no authority to create any codes and call them criminal codes against the people. Okay.
So they'll assess all that. They'll look at that, right, and see what.
That's why we're working with this group, the Republic Review, to have a Republic Review of all of the all of the legislation.
I like them.
Yeah. So all of the legislation on the federal level and should happen on the state level too, needs to be addressed and they need to show that it has constitutional authority, and if not, it's null and void and it's got to be removed from the law. And that must be eventually accomplished. I know we're working with that now, but when we get to the other side, I think it's going to speed up very quickly.
Yeah, we won't have, they won't be a member of a club, once a month or whatever, the bar, British Accredited Registry. They won't have to, be joined.
Right, well, remember, they're under the ABA.
ABA.
It was the American Bar Association,
yes,
ABA.
We won't, will they have that?
Okay. But that bar is still, that's a subdivision of the British bar. So we all, I think, agree on that. But go ahead. No, that has to go because they're guilty of treason. Okay? They teach subversion and treason. It's got to shut down. Anybody that belongs to the bar has to leave it. The lawyers, the judges, they can't operate in the courtrooms because it's contrary to the
Constitution. Correct. Yeah, that's what I mean. And then the judge is going to have to learn constitutional law. And if he doesn't want to do that, then he's not going to have a job.
Well, I think we're going to have a lot of different judges anyway because most of these judges, if not all of them, belong in jail.
Just
think of all
right.
the damage they've done, all the people they put in jail unlawfully to begin with. They didn't have the power and authority to incarcerate anyone. Only the people have that power through the juries. That's the only ones. No administrative court has the power or the authority to fine or incarcerate. Only the people can do that.
That's right.
So.
Yeah.
And okay, I got to go.
All right.
Thank you for your time, John. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. All right. Good night, everyone. And Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday. And we'll pick it up from there. Good night.